This week on RSVNB Update, we weave through RuneScape's most immersive quest ever, The Needle Skips. The storytelling, mechanics, and music are sewn together in this unique, one-of-a-kind RuneScape experience. Finally, some discussion threads about what we are thankful for. This is RSVNB Update, episode 699, recorded Thursday, November 22nd, 2018. The Needle Skips. Deep as the Tazar. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for RSVNB Update. And to those of you guys listening in the United States, happy Thanksgiving, or shortly thereafter, because this is being recorded on the Thursday, American Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving, and I guess this marks the start of the holiday season with Black Friday, later Cyber Monday, then into December we go. And as a result of that, Tannis isn't here this week because, you know, family obligations, family sorting out time scales. We could have done the show with Tannis, but it would have had to have been at a very, very odd time. So we elected to not do that. And instead, this week, joining us is Sirion. Welcome.
I'm so glad to be, like, standing Tannis. I such an honor. You brought that with such a positivity towards me. Thank you.
And it's such a good week for it too.
I will forgive you because it is quest week.
Yes. And also because it's quest week, in traditional RSVNB Update tradition, we are continuing on the tradition of quest week, bringing someone on from Clan Quest. And this week joining us is Diana from Clan Quest, your first appearance on the podcast. Welcome.
Hello, it's great to be here.
So just to tell the world, tell the listeners a brief little bit about you and your RuneScape character, whatever you want to say.
Okay, I'm Diana, or Dianima. I've been playing RuneScape 3 for about 4 years now. I'm a community PMod. I'm definitely a questing and lore player, so I got very excited about the new quest this week. That's kind of what I do.
Excellent. And, you know, I think this is, you know, a perfect week for a lorehound, just given everything
definitely that
we have with this quest. And, you know, this quest started off as a little project during Game Jam of 2017. Mod Osborne wrote the story behind it and the general idea of how it was going to work, and then Mod Krista developed it before leaving Jagex, and then over time the product was refined, and here we are. We have a release of The Needle Skips, and, you know, I think going back to RuneFest, this is probably the, I don't know, is this the biggest RS3 reveal that we were the most excited about?
I think so. For me, yes. Because it was a new quest, and we haven't had a new quest in a while. So, yay!
Yeah, the last one was May with You Are It.
Yeah, and also this is the 400th quest point quest.
Yep,
so
400th quest point.
Quite a major one, and obviously they've obviously put quite a lot of work into it because it's the 400th quest point quest. I think they wanted to make it something special.
I mean, 100 was Recipe for Disaster. No, that was the 100th quest, not the 100th quest point, but a milestone nonetheless. So now people who are casual RuneScape players, people who aren't interested in lore, will note that, you know, this quest is called The Needle Skips. And for most people, this might bring back memories of a needle on a gramophone playing a record, right? But in reality, what this is for RuneScape is talking about one of RuneScape's elder artifacts. Something that the Elder Gods used to aid them in the creation of the world, the Needle. Previously, we've seen the Stone of Jazz. We've heard about the Measure. I think
we've got the Measure in our bank if we've done the quest associated with it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's currently hanging around.
But overall, Elder artifacts are a big deal. And I think any quest that deals with an Elder artifact by that extension is also a big deal as well. I don't think there's any dancing around that fact.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I think that makes this quest so awesome, because the story is small, right? The story really focuses on something like something that is like really intimate and like it involves a small group of people in a faraway place, which I think is awesome because like you have this massive, powerful object that's sort of world changing, and then it applies to a quest that's about family and like closeness. So, you know, that contrast is there, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. It was such a small bottle quest and such a, like you said, very intimate and very personal story to have this artifact left over from the Elder Gods just there in the background being a key part of it. It was a really, really nice contrast, and I think it gave it added a lot to the quest, definitely.
Yeah, and you know, you start off the quest, and in the opening cutscene, it says a word can save the world, and then you interact with the needle on the hill, and you get a big panning shot down the path into the house where the murder mystery took place. And we've had other murder mystery quests in the past in RuneScape, and I think when it comes down to it, we'll get to, of course, the whole story behind this and what we've learned from this, and that, you know, it's a murder mystery, yes, but it's a different murder mystery. So before we delve too far deep into that, I'll just say to everyone listening to this that, as it is Quest Week, we're going to be going through the quest. So spoiler alert going forward, I always like to say that when it comes to these lore-intensive quests, just in case someone might be listening who doesn't want that spoiled. Personally, I don't care about spoilers, but I know there are people out there who do. So you get the needle when you begin, and you're presented with a grid of like 20, 21, 22 unlocked memories or locked memories. And from there, it's really up to you how you do this. What was the first word that you guys input into the needle? Because what ends up happening here is you interact with the needle, and they have it displayed like a search engine, and it says search for keywords. Then there's a matrix or a grid of padlocked memories. So what was the first word you guys put in?
Megan.
Yep, same. All right, fair enough.
Mostly
think
because Raven said that was the first word in the stream about it. So,
okay.
He kind of gave that away for the All first right. one.
All right. Yeah, and I did that because it says she has a word Megan in blood written next to her body. And we really don't know what ends up what's happening with this. We don't know what the whole ethos of the needle is until we start unraveling its history, let's say, because you know, if you read up a bit of the behind the scenes of this quest, you would know that the needle is involved with time travel and the threads of the world. But if you were just going into this, you would need to, of course, learn that on your own. So this quest is also very interesting because there is no set specific way to complete it. And, you know, if you were wanting to, you could enter in the three words that get you to each of the acts in this quest, watch the end cutscene, and be done in under 5 minutes, probably. You could do that if you wanted to. Obviously, we didn't do that here. So,
obviously not.
What was your guys' general methodology for figuring out where you were going to go and what you were going to enter?
I sort of winged it, to be honest.
Yeah, okay.
I kept sort of a list in my head. I picking out keywords from like the last conversation, sort of keeping a list in my head, and it actually worked quite well. For the last chapter, I actually started keeping a sort of a backlog, like a list
yep.
of words
Same.
To try. But I also started, when I started doing that, I noticed I started sort of trying a lot of random words that didn't have anything to do with it. So I don't know, two approaches both got me to the chapter, but.
Yeah, that was largely my approach as well. It's the quest is divided into three chapters, and you move on to the chapter when you unlock the last word of, or the last memory of that chapter. So I'm just gonna say this right now, and then we'll jump back to what was revealed in the first chapter. But in the first chapter, it got to a point where I had, you know, examined everything in the house, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. And, you know, I knew that this was related to the Elder Gods, so I just started typing in the names of the Elder Gods. Then I tried typing in the names of all of the core elements, so air, earth, fire, and then of course that ticked me off and sent me off to the next stage on that one. So that's how I got through the end of chapter one. And I did this with, let me just pull up the picture here. How many did I have left on this? I made it through the first one with five memories not found.
I had three memories not found on the first chapter.
All right.
I got all of them on the first chapter, but that was the only chapter where I got all of them.
Okay.
I need to replay it and get the chapter three. I missed a few, but chapter one, I just kept going over and over and over again. Eventually I did get all of them. But you're right. Finding all the words was quite difficult, and I haven't found all the words yet, I don't think.
Yeah. And, you know, there are duplicates, so you can, you know, some memories have multiple words that kind of unlock them and whatnot. So you can, that is, you know, full completion is unlocking all the words, because if you look at the needle, it'll show a bulleted list, and that list will have a bunch of question marks beside it for whenever you're missing a word, even if you've already unlocked that memory. So... Mm-hmm. What did we think of chapter one? I mean, I took chapter one as learning about Maggie and Primrose and what was happening in the house.
Chapter one felt very much like a prologue, right? Like a starting. I had, to be honest, I had completely forgotten about the whole time travel thing. So I had no idea what to expect. I came into it fairly blindly. And as soon as I started, I was completely immersed. And, you know, that is not so... That is, in games, that has only happened twice before in my life that I've been fully immersed in a game. And neither of those were inside RuneScape. So, you know, if I was completely sucked into the story, I can skip to voice, voice actor dialogue, because it just goes to slower than I can read, but I listened to everything and went through it. So I was sucked into the story, and it was a great setup to the rest of it. I think it had a lot of sort of tangents. It's sort of, there's like the Wizard's Tower stuff, and there's like the Sea Troll stuff, and like there's lots of sort of things that could be going, and only at the end of that chapter did it start to narrow into like the actual storyline. I think it was really well written as well.
Yeah, definitely. And you
agree. The writing.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I said the writing was really, really good. And I think chapter one was my favorite one of the three, mostly on account of the voice acting. The actress who voiced Megan, I thought, was just brilliant. Like, sometimes in game voice acting, it can feel a bit hammed up, like a bit overdone, especially if they're quite emotional lines that are being said. But it just felt so natural and very, very real. And Megan's quite a complicated character. She's so flawed. I really, really enjoyed that part of it. But also, additionally, it was, you were saying, it's quite a broad kind of prologue type chapter. So it branched out into lots of different areas. Like, I really like that, because we don't often get, as player characters, as the main protagonist of the game, we don't often get to see what everyday life is like for the rest of the world. Well, in this case, we had kind of little insights to what normal people got up to while we're off saving the world. And I thought that was really lovely. And that happened, I think, in chapter two as well, from Primrose's perspective. But I really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah. And the voice acting added another level to this. And, you know, people always say, why don't you do all the quests voice acted? And people say that because they just want to listen to the storyline for one reason or another, but this one definitely added something to it.
I mean, I fully understand the choice to do voice acting on this quest. I think without it, I might not have been sucked in as much as I did. I think there's quests in the game that wouldn't benefit from voice acting that much. But this one definitely did. I'm so glad they did it. I think it got a million times better to it.
It added this whole other layer to it. So, although if you take out the voice acting, like, there's not a lot actually going on in the quest. So I would argue that the voice acting is actually a really, really important part of it. So I'm really glad they went with it. And especially there's one chapter, one part even of chapter one called Songbird that I found completely by accident, just trying random words. And it's just lovely little a cappella song, very short. And it just took me completely by surprise and just kind of sitting there like, oh my God, this is beautiful. So it added so much more, and I'm very glad they went with it.
Oh, okay. That's one that I'm missing then. Sirion, yeah, did you get that one?
I think I remember that mentioned, actually, the Songbird, so it might just be that.
Yeah, it's not. I think it's one of these tangent ones that I just found took me completely by surprise, but very, very nice.
Yeah, and you know what? Going back to the methodology, anytime there was a noun or something that was capitalized, that was a word that I tried regarding this. Or if it, you know, seemed as one section of the dialogue was focusing on a specific character, a specific idea, that was a word that went in. And you know, I honestly think this is a quest that people should do without a quest guide.
Yes.
How long did you guys spend on the whole shebang?
Probably about 2 hours, I would say.
All right.
Yeah, about 2.5 to 2 hours.
Yeah, hour and a half for me. Okay.
It's not long, but I did take a lot of time trying to complete it completely.
Yeah.
That surprised me in the first chapter, right? It's the writing was. I was really skeptical when this idea was first proposed, like with the words. I was like, that's never going to be fun, right? But, you know, it flowed. Like, I didn't really get stuck in the first chapter at all. I had something to try at all times. I never resorted to random words. It flowed pretty well. And it's also, I mean, you had these things to capitalize these words, but it didn't feel like the dialogue was too catered on presenting you with the right words. And that makes this all the more impressive.
Yeah.
So engaged in the story, and yet the story was completely fabricated to make sure that you could find the right words to continue it. And this story works no matter in what order you put in the words. Like, that is not just great writing. That is, I can't even describe it. That writing is just so smart and good. I don't know how they did
Osborne he did such a good job on it. It's really subtly done. And it works very nicely as a mechanic.
It is a masterpiece of writing. Like, this is next level. Like,
he deserves some kind of award for this.
Like,
let Maud Osborne write more quests.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
In summary.
All right. So basically what happens in chapter one is you're learning about Megan, how she's sick in her room, relies on the characters in her book to keep her company. And the characters, of course, go away whenever her mom comes up and into her room. And, you know, it's the classic sense of a child's imagination of how they view imaginary characters and whatnot. And you know, that was the interesting part of this, is that this is it built up that character in the first chapter, I think. And when did you guys start getting hints of what was actually going to be happening? I mean, obviously we know she wasn't well, but when were the first hints?
I'm not sure if it was revealed in chapter one. I think it's chapter two that actually started.
Yeah.
Happening.
And I mean, chapter one was, okay, this is interesting. Is there anything else we want to say about chapter one in general? I mean, it's a building up of her story that these people have lived in this far-flung area, Piscatoris, for a long time. She sees her mom leave and whatnot. She doesn't know where she's going. We learn more about that later. We learn about the house. The apothecary was in chapter two. All right. But anything else on chapter one before we move on to chapter two and talk about the general sense of that one?
Nope.
And, you know, normally what we do in this quest is we talk about the exact story. And what we're doing here is we're basically saying, chapter one, you're going to learn about Megan. And there's just so much dialogue, so much lore in this quest that I don't think we can I don't think we can accurately summarize the entirety of the story in this podcast. You need to play the quest.
You need to experience it.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Get on with it. Go on. Go do it now.
Yeah.
Pause the podcast.
No, don't pause the podcast. Pause the podcast after the quest segment. And then
do chapter 2 and 3 so you don't get spoilers.
Yeah, there you go. Listening. There you go. Okay. So chapter 2 is unlocked by the word fire. And I said I came across this one by accident. How did you guys come across fire and fireplace?
The fireplace was pretty obvious in the house, so I just tried it. I was at that point just trying different objects in the house.
Okay.
I can't remember how I got it. I think I did it by... No, I can't remember. I got it somehow. I got it towards the end after I'd unlocked most of the other...
Mm-hmm,
though. So it kind of came naturally towards the end of me completing that section.
All right. Now,
and that's when it turned dark for me. When the whole thing sort of started.
Yes, definitely.
Like the whole happy life, even though it wasn't happy, sort of. Yeah.
Well, I mean... I mean, we knew something was up because they called it a murder mystery, right?
Yeah.
But, but
this is where the veneer started to crack.
Yeah.
One of the things I really liked about chapter 2 was this change of perspective.
Yes.
It was beautifully done. It was.
It's from the girl's perspective now.
Yeah. And so chapter 1 was Megan. Chapter 2 is Primrose.
Primrose. And one of my favorite thing about chapter 2 was how it revealed this whole other side to Megan's character.
Hmm.
In Megan's part in chapter 1, it's all from her perspective of herself. And then now we see like Primrose describing her as angry. And Primrose say, she treats me like I'm 5 years old. Like all these extra flaws that you wouldn't get from the first part start to come up in the second part. And it just... adds all these new layers to the characters that was really great to read. You don't often get that in writing for games. It's more common in kind of novel writing.
It made Megan human.
It did, yeah. And I found you don't often get that in games. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. Let's keep going.
So we mentioned the word dark. And, I mean, you don't get any more dark by someone... talking about a scar that appears on someone's face that looks like a Gothic symbol, but you're not sure where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this quest starting in Act 2, just in general with all the different characters appearing here, you know, like Jilly Willikers and whatnot, Hannibus and the like... It's interesting to see all these other characters that we have seen in game before, especially the clown, but then see how it applies to this one specific quest.
This is I think kind of what relates to what I said earlier about it, how it gave us an insight to how the rest of the world works. So all these characters that we know as the player character, as the main character, they have books written about them. They have children's books written about them that kids read. I thought that was such a lovely little touch, like Hannibus, something about Hannibus, and the Adventures of Thok, and Jilly Winkers has a children's book series written about him. I thought that was really sweet. That was a really nice little touch to include. So I included that. And then there was the sheep, of course. I didn't really understand
it. that was a little bit of a weird one, having the sheep appear outside the room.
Yeah.
Is this the first RuneScape quest where we're not the main character and we're effectively viewing it from a third-party perspective?
Oh.
Because we're not taking part in the story. We're looking for memories of what happened.
In the Evil Dave quest, we were Evil Dave.
Right.
Sort of. Kinda.
But we knew we were Evil Dave.
Yeah.
Whereas here, we're kind of just observing at least until the very end. Hmm. Which I don't know if RS has ever done that before.
Maybe not deliberately. Like Children of Mar included something like that because we didn't do a lot to influence the story. It was kind of the story was happening and we were there. But I think that was a bit more just the nature of the story that was being told. I think it's very much more deliberate in this case. I'm not sure if they've done it deliberately before.
What we have, of course, is the dungeoneering. I forgot the name of them. Like the mini quests you're doing, like the dungeons, like the one with Moya, the one with Falk, two with Falk actually.
Dungeoneering sagas.
Dungeoneering sagas. Yeah. You play as a different character there, though. I think it's very different from being an observer, being an outsider, being not. Being the one that actually does this stuff and replace it, but hearing it. And that's like, there was very little clicking and gameplay in here, right? It was basically finding the right words. You could do this quest without even moving from the needle, basically.
Yeah. Now, Act 2 is where it gets really interesting, because in Act 2, we have words that appear like the 30th at the end of 30 days, something was going to happen. We also have the return, which
didn't find that one.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I actually found chapter 2 the hardest of all three chapters. Okay. And I'm missing the most words. So I think I'm missing like 7 or 8 that chapter.
Okay.
Yeah.
I found chapter 2, relatively, straightforward on that one. I was only missing 2 words from chapter 2.
Mm.
Or 2 memories from chapter 2. Then there was one that basically said, oh, don't utter this word. And that was Mitum, the demon. I was expecting more from that one. I thought that was going to be the word that would move us on.
Yeah. It became really important at the end.
It did interestingly say, Sirion, that you missed it. Because that's something I found quite interesting about things like, I think we can talk about the finale later when we get to that, but that's a really key word to finishing the quest.
Yes, and I had to, I ended up being really confused, and then I found out that one of the bookcases was searchable and found the book and that had a description and that allowed me to move on.
Right.
So the game did unblock me there, and I found it weird that that was the first mention of it, but now it makes sense. Like, I was supposed to find it. I just completely missed it.
Yeah. Basically, I went to the demon, you know, the word Mitum and then whatnot. It talked about a tomb, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And then that revealed the book under the bed that talked about the birthday. So then I put birthday into it. And that kicked me over into chapter 3.
Yeah, I got book relatively early in that chapter, I think, and that sort of kicked me off in that direction.
Okay, and you didn't see birthday in there. You didn't think of going to birthday first,
or you didn't? Oh, birthday! I ended up doing, and then I got on with that chapter, but I missed the whole part of it.
Oh, okay.
Like, it was like this one moment I had to sort of get over, and then yeah.
I think I missed tomb in chapter 2, but I got the part about the demon. And I thought, this could be useful later on.
But yeah, I think chapter 2 is when that's when sort of the feels started kicking in. That's when I got the chills. And,
yep.
You know, that's like the music became darker throughout the quest as well. And this was just...
Oh, yes. Can I just say something about the music? Mod Grace has done such a good job with it. Like you were saying, how it gradually got darker through and through as you went through the chapters. It was so good, and I don't know whether you, like, I only noticed it right at the end, but all the way through, especially downstairs, you've got the grandfather clock just ticking away.
Yep.
In the background. That was such a clever.
I was wondering
all the way through. That was great.
I was wondering what that noise was, and then there's a clock.
Yeah.
Tick tock in the background. It's like brilliant.
Oh my god! It's so
here,
cute.
let me
it's
see
so
if I
beautiful.
Can if I can provide a bit of atmosphere of what it was like upstairs in chapter 2. I have the recording.
It's absolutely audio. But like
I love that bit of audio. It was just such a nice little, there were so many of those like nice little touches that just brought it all together and made it something very I think special.
Yeah, it appears I didn't get the audio recording from my game client then, which is unfortunate, but you know, and we talk about the story being done so well, but the atmosphere in this quest was done so well as well. And you know, chapter two is when you realize something is horribly wrong, and you don't know who was involved in the murder, but you get the eerie sense that something isn't right here, and maybe you might be thrown into some kind of chaotic cutscene and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, you said the chills. I don't think an RS Quest has ever done that before for me.
No, and I think so. At this point, it is this really weird connection. Like, you're really engrossed in the story, but at the same time, you're trying to get these keywords out of this story to move the quest forward. And you have to do the same things for both goals, right? You want to, like, you both want to read the stuff and get all the information out of it and soak it up. And to me, this was such a beautiful example of storytelling and game mechanics sort of married together, if that's a good way to describe it. And, you know, I think I've done it as a pick of the week on the show before. One other game that does this is Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, right?
Yep, fairly certain you have.
Oh, I've heard very good things about that.
If you haven't played that, I definitely recommend. It's not expensive. I think the Falso is going on now. Like, just go pick it up. It's like $1 or $2 probably at this point. And, you know, it's like a 1 or 2 hour experience. It's very much like this quest, right? The game mechanics are directly tied into sort of the story, and you are part of it. You're doing certain things. And at the end of it, something happens, and all of a sudden it just hits you, right, in one big sort of burst. And that's because you have been so intertwined with the story and the characters. And this did the same thing. You're so connected to it that when this chapter happens and everything turns sour, you go right down there with them. And I wish this quest had been around about, it must have been like 4 years ago. I did a research proposal on narrative engagement together with, where I looked at games and saw like how players responded emotionally during a story where you did this stuff versus just being an observer. And I think this is a great example where the fact that you are the one that types in the words makes this experience a lot stronger than you would get from just seeing this or reading this, because you are there, right? You are the one pushing this forward. So, you know, RuneScape lore has always been special, but this is something new and amazing that they've done. And to see that within a game like RuneScape, I am stunned beyond explaining.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. I feel like there was also, through the act of trying to find the words, there was this real drive, like, okay, you by the time you get into it, you really feel like you have to find the words, you have to find out what happened next. Even if you know, okay, the rewards for this quest aren't great, you still, well, they're not great. It's a novice quest. There's no requirements. You don't expect the rewards to be great. But you still, you have to find out what happens. You have to find out, okay, what happened here and how am I involved with it? Yeah. And I think that was a really kind of, there was an emotional push to get it done as well, which I thought was great.
At the end of the quest, I got a lamp and I was like, oh, right, I get rewards for this. I was like, I didn't even expect that. I thought the quest itself was so rewarding just to do that I had completely forgotten that I was supposed to finish it and get like the quest point and all that stuff. I don't think that has ever happened before.
Yeah.
It's different. It's very different.
For reference, episode 616 is when you did that as Pick of the Week, Sirion.
All right, there you go.
That was the Spring Fair in 2017, which had the wonderful title of Yada Da 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 and Ding Ding Ding. So words from chapter two. Here's some of the words I tried, and it was around chapter two I started writing these words down. Bed. Sore, Guthix, Seer, Thok, Shade, Demon, Damonheim, Jilly, Primrose, Champion, Baba. Those are just a few of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that I had this piece of paper, and I wish I would have documented better than, you know, just having to watch through my quest replay on this of the order I took. But I actually started writing these down, and I think it'd be interesting to see what the majority of the player base does in the direction that they take on this.
Mm. I think there's a potential that lots of different people are going to have lots of different experiences of the quest, depending on what order they unlocked the memories.
Precisely.
Whether they got all of them first time round, or whether they've missed some parts. I think that's not something I'd considered before, but it would be interesting to find out.
Yeah. Apparently plagiarism is a word in chapter 2.
Oh.
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah. I didn't get that one.
Yeah, I didn't get that one. Just looking at the RS Wiki of the list here of ones that I might not have had. Constellations? Yeah, either you guys get that one?
I think nope. I got that one, actually.
Okay, I didn't get that one. But yeah, I mean, there's various many ways to go through this, and the demon, and, you know, I thought that, as I said, I thought that would kick it through, and we got even more information on... I found interesting that this whole little sub-story about the apothecary and Varrock and tying that in with the Wizard's Tower, that was really neat. That little sub-story in there. So, and I don't know if we've ever had a quest this deep. And obviously we have had deep quests before on the lore and the ramifications to them, but...
I mean the Tsar quests are pretty deep underground.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
But you know what I mean. Like, yes, this isn't as impactful as a Children of Mars, Sliske's Endgame, but it feels much more impactful just because it's so deep in the connection it created.
I think it's because it's so personal. Like, it's a very small cast. It's all localized in a very tiny area. And it's all about the people. It's all about what they say and what they feel. Other, and that's why I think it's packing this real emotional punch.
Yeah.
That we haven't found really in other quests so far, and oh, it's so good, I love it.
So this is where also we learn of things happening on the 30th day. So, you know, one of the pieces of dialogue is that the book was completely blank after this date. And keep in mind, we're seeing this here from the perspective of Primrose. So with that...
This was so beautifully done.
Yeah. So Primrose realizes she's withering, and she sees Megan and whatnot. Megan's diary, and, you know, Megan coming in every so often to check on her and the like. And then she grabs Megan's book, reads it, and sees there's nothing after the 30th. And then at the time, ends up putting it away when Megan comes into the room to check on her. And then, you know, one of the very key lines and one of the very ominous lines of this is that, and every entry on the 30th, of which there were many, was the same. The return, the return, the return, the return, the return.
And you know what makes this so powerful? It's after chapter 1, Megan goes back for the first time, right? And this whole time, I was in chapter 2, I was thinking, okay, she's back for like one time. And then you find out through Primrose, through that perspective, that no, and actually Megan has been going back again and again and again and again. And that's when you see how desperate she's clinging on to this return. And you see this from Primrose's perspective, and it makes it all the more emotional to find out. And
it's quite chilling as well, because each time, oh, I'll do it one more time. This is the last time I'll do it. I'll do it one more time. Yeah, and I saw a fantastic Reddit post somewhere, I've completely forgotten who wrote it, talking about how it's almost like an addiction for her, you know, going back in time.
Yes, I was thinking the exact same thing.
And it's just when you realise that you were saying that dialogue where it was the return, the return, the return. It's so chilling to hear.
Yeah,
they could not have had this effect if they told the second chapter from Megan's perspective as well.
Nope.
They could not. It had to be done from Primrose's perspective. And that's what makes this so powerful, because we find out at the same time as Primrose. Because we have more information when we start the chapter. But during the chapter, Primrose overtakes us, and that's when we sort of catch up, and that's when the reality hits us at the same time as the main character. That's some advanced narrative stuff.
Let me highlight the moment it got really chilling for me. I resolved to follow Mom out on her nightly trip of the house. Hanimus gave me his lance, Thok his shield. I knew they would both disappear as soon as I left the house.
So beautiful.
Because, of course, they're her book characters, but I thank them anyways. And then following from this, I seek that too far. So the door closed as my mom left. I pulled the dark cloak over my shoulders, took a swig for strength, and then stepped out into the darkness. So keep in mind that you're reading this. You don't know where this is going. You had just been uncovering these memories. And if you were like I was, you would be reading this and you didn't know exactly where we were going with this. Then it continues. Mom had a small firebrand, which made her easy to follow, but I had no such luxury. I was locked to darkness. Every sound I made, I feared she would turn around, but she only had eyes for the hilltop. And of course, on the hilltop is where you have the needle. So basically, Primrose follows her out and says, "We passed something like a grave, but I had no time to dilly-dally. Mom was many steps ahead of me, and I could feel the strength in me already sapping." And keep in mind here that Primrose has been degraded. So, with that, just look at how deep this is. It then says, "Mom has reached the top. I hid behind a berry bush on the edge of the clearing." Keep that in mind, everyone. "A tall blue woman called Gail was waiting for my mother." And Gail is who our third chapter is told by. But continuing on with Primrose's story here, "They talked and I could only make out fragments. And then Gail danced without music." And then that's the end of that memory fragment. So you don't exactly know what's happening, but you know that there's definitely something going on out there. And, you know, reading what I read about the needle and I saw the return on the 30th, I had assumed by this point that we were dealing with something where one of them was at least going back. And, you know, I think at this point I can say that, you know, I've watched every episode of Star Trek that exists out there. And I don't think there has been a time travel episode that would have had this much of impact as this RS Quest has had.
I mean, at this point, at the end of chapter 2, it all started clicking to me, right? Like, all the hints, everything, it started clicking for me. So that was really well done. They never explicitly said what it was until in chapter 3, but, it was clear. And I am not a big fan of time travel in general. I find it a trope that is overused and generally just leads to messy stuff. But this, I mean, it's going to get more amazing. I won't spoil that quite yet. It's going to get more amazing. But this, I read this and I was like, this is probably the best use of time travel I've ever seen in any story. It's beautiful. I keep saying beautiful this episode, but that's the only word I can use to sort of explain how they've done all this.
I agree with you on the time travel thing. It's so hard to get right in fiction because there's so many ways it could just go wrong. If you think about it too much, it just falls apart. It just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure whether, again, the twist at the end that I won't spoil until we get there, I'm still not entirely sure whether it makes sense or whether I'm happy with it or not. But I think there's been a few quests with time travel in RuneScape at the moment. There's making history and meeting history, obviously, and one of the Saren quests as well. And in general, it mostly works. Sometimes it's a bit dissatisfying, but I think out of all the examples we've had, this is the one that works the best.
Yep, and it's simple. It's super simple.
It's very simple. It's very simple. Just before we move on to chapter 3, I'd like to say something about the book characters.
Please.
and mentioned that there was a memory that mentioned how Primrose's father gave her the book characters. He enchanted, I can't remember whether it was her or the books, so that whenever she read them, whenever she said these characters' names, they would come to life for her. And I wish that had been explored more. Because I thought, whenever I read that it was Joss, the father, who did this, I was convinced it was something to do with the plot. I thought it was going to be more important.
Yeah.
The fact that he gave this to her, and that soon after that she became ill. Yeah. So I thought that was going to be explored more. But it wasn't in the end, and it's just kind of this hanging question. But maybe it's something that we'll go into later. Or maybe not. But it's definitely an unanswered question.
Yeah, Joss was a chapter one word, and you know, I ended up putting that in, but there really wasn't much expansion on that. So,
Like, I get he wasn't that relevant to the plot in the end, but it just would have been nice to have that expanded on a bit more. Kind of, oh, that's a really interesting spell and an idea that you can make these book characters come to life, and yeah, how for one, but yeah, I kind of, that's kind of a minor criticism I have. I kind of wish it had been explored a bit more.
Yeah,
I mean, seems I think like there's a few loose ends to tie up in general. Mm. I think like the sea troll was such a random thing that sort of dropped from the quest. And I think I did in the end, I didn't figure out at least like the grave, what that had to do with it either. So, you know, there's a few
red herrings and the
yeah, exactly. And maybe,
is
I don't know, they didn't distract from the main story too much, but they were there sort of to, I feel like in the start it was fine, but in the end there were still a few sort of side things that maybe didn't have to be there.
Well, maybe it's fine leaving them as unanswered questions. Like maybe it's one of those things where we're not going to get all the answers because the story's done now, and that's just part of the narrative, which is, I think, in a small quest like this is fine.
Yeah. You know, and we'll talk about where this is going after, because I think there's lots of interesting opportunities for this. But after you discover birthday as the last word to move on from this chapter, you head on up to the needle and you discover another temporal portal that takes you to chapter 3. Now, let's just have a look at what these the exact words were here. And this is with Gale. And of course, this is all very good because Gale is who the story is told from in chapter 3. The end is beginning, Megan. I will give you another return, but you have to prepare yourself. The Anima, she won't let you do this forever. Events will conspire and you will not be able to follow this path continuously. You may not see it in Primrose, but I see your daughter. She is doubt, and doubt blossoms faster than any disease. Time can do nothing to halt that.
Again, beautiful, isn't it? And I wasn't really sure what it meant until this chapter started revealing itself. And it did so, I think, in the same way as chapter 2, right? Like, I'm not sure if I'm jumping too far ahead now, but like only at the end of the chapter did I find out that, hey, Primrose has been going back in time now as well with Megan and sort of like following her mother every single time. You know,
it's another jump forward in time, isn't it? Which fits in with the whole thing of the needle skips. It's another skip forward in time that we've missed.
Exactly. It's the same as finding out together with Primrose that Megan has been returning all those times. And this is like, we find out at the same time as, we don't really find out together with anyone, but like we are the last one to know. Everybody knows. Well, Megan knows even later, I guess, but that was also really well done, sort of that drop. And at that point, I saw how tragic this was, like the tragic direction this was going.
Yeah. So you get into chapter 3. Gale says, helping someone is the hardest thing in the world. Hurting someone pushes them away. Help someone, they'll need you again and again and again. They will need to return the favor, reimburse you, or they'll need your help forevermore. You can be sure that you're the new center of their world. I've met someone who needs people more intensely than Megan, both Primrose and I. actually saying no to someone in need, that's the hardest thing in the world.
And it's a beautiful life lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like Gail. I really, really like Gail. Like her, she's another one that's very, very flawed. And at the start, she's desperate for acceptance and desperate for a family because she has no memories at the start and she doesn't know what's going on. And then you can tell as you get more, as you unlock more memories of her, she gains this understanding and she gains this knowledge of family based on what she's seeing with Megan and Primrose. And the while, and that's why she's helping Megan, I think, because she has acceptance, but then she gets trapped in this cycle and can't break out of it. And she's so flawed and so real, I felt. Mm. It was great to have her character revealed kind of sequentially in that manner, kind of chapter by chapter, learning more about her as she learns more as well. It was great.
And, you know, by the time we get to chapter 3, the music track playing is called Darker Threads, which is, of course, very... Yes. I actually want to talk a bit about this. We talked about the clock and the music and whatnot, but it just ramps up and up and up. It's a slow ramp up, but by the time you're at chapter 3, you're so eager to figure out what's happening next, and you're really not sure, oh my gosh, what is going to happen to this character? Is she going to, you know, burst and wither in front of me, or are we going to have some otherworldly being spawn and do her in? But of course, it's none of that. When you get to the end, some words that I tried from chapter 3 in no particular order. Barry, Primrose, Megan, no, Buckthorn, fainted, pale, Bush, dead, knife, traitor, betray, and burn. Then there's one that was, you know, just mentioned that I absolutely had to enter at the end, and that was Wenla. That one stuck out for me. I mean, I don't want to jump to the end right now, but as soon as that word was uttered, I knew that was important because, mm-hmm. I mean, Wen is an elder god.
I saved that one too.
Mm-hmm. So,
that's probably why I ended up having only like 2 or 3 missing in the last chapter. I wanted to make sure I got as much of it as possible before dropping the big one.
Yeah. And I mean, we don't know much about Wen as it is, and I want to talk more about that in the post-quest discussion. But basically in chapter 3, what we're discovering is from Gail's perspective, is Gail been watching everything that's been going on with Megan and Primrose and, you know, seeing the return and whatnot, seeing the shift that they've both been having, the withering and the like. And, you know, at the end of the day, we learn that what has been happening here is really just a temporal loop so that Megan can keep going back to keep spending more and more time with Primrose, but we don't really know, she doesn't really know how devastating this is for Primrose, because Primrose herself as a character, I guess the best way of saying it would be losing a bit of life force with her every time she jumps back, as in, she can keep jumping back, but it's not going to make her any better.
Yeah, I mean, the hard bit comes when Primrose finds out for the first time and then starts going back with Megan, right? And so Primrose doesn't heal 30 days. Like, she doesn't get 30 extra days. She's there and the same as before and getting sicker and sicker because Megan is sort of... Yeah, the going back in time doesn't make a difference anymore at that point because they're both in the same time stream. And Gail knows, and Megan doesn't, and then when she finds out,
And, you know, there's just look at the tone of words that has changed, words that are available to have in this chapter. Possessed, ill, help, fainted, dead, disease, dying. And I mean, you could see the general tone, the scar, as well, worse. So we've gone from learning about these characters to learning that something is horribly wrong, and there's going to be a specific ending that's ultimately going to happen for these characters. I made it through the final arc with, this was actually a really short one for me. I made it through with seven memories that weren't found before I entered Wenla at the end. So,
yeah, I went through and tried finding as many words as possible, but I'm pretty stuck now in the last few words, so I gave up and finished a quest.
Yeah. Anything on Chapter 3 story that we want to go through before talking about how this ends up ending?
Just the drop, right, that I mentioned. That was the main point for me.
Oh, the drop in...
And that we find out that Primrose has been
right, okay,
coming along for the ride and becoming ill and
yeah,
close to death.
No. What I thought was quite clever was the fifth memory. There was someone in there with her. That one was a really, really chilling little one, and kind of to me was the clue of what's really going on.
What was that called? I don't have my.
There was someone in there with her.
The thing.
Oh yeah, that was.
It was the first clue that there was something very, very badly wrong, even more so than we first thought.
Yeah,
came out of burning the book, so you know maybe that's sort of the explanation of the story.
Yeah, but that was kind of links back to what happened in the earlier chapters. But I thought this kind of maybe this is the explanation that was quite chilling. But again, it was very subtly done. Like, it wasn't kind of thrown at you as this is definitely what's gone on. It was kind of, possibly here's the plot twist, but can't be certain just yet. Kind of, maybe. And, yeah, it was nice and subtle and kind of a very, very, again, very nicely done. Very cleverly done, I felt.
Yeah, so, that's...
Have you just found it? You've just read it?
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Whew, okay. what else do we want to mention in Chapter 3 here? I'm gonna try and get a full transcript of that memory up here in just a moment. But anything else in the meantime in Chapter 3 that you guys want to bring up?
No.
I don't think so.
All right. Let's see. There was someone in there with her. All right, let's see. Chapter 3. There was someone in there with her. All right, here we go. Ever since Megan burned the book, something had moved in her. It was like Megan had shifted aside to be only seen occasionally. There was something in there with her. At first, I thought she'd just abandoned her sense of self, given everything up for Primrose. But no, there was something in there with her, a thing.
Yeah, I thought that was proper horror story stuff there. Great. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let's talk about how we uncover Wenla, because that's a pretty big one. Now, this is a message that you get when you're chatting here in the memory is called Talking to Gale. So. The knife, oh yeah, here's another creepy one. The knife slipped between my ribs. I don't remember much of what Megan said as she stood above me, but it was clear she blamed me for Primrose's death. And to keep in mind, this is Gale talking about Megan. Then she ran down the hill as I moved as close to the needle as I could. My life was ebbing, but I was still able to touch the needle. I prepared to use the pausing phrase, Wenla. Perhaps somehow we will be found with the needle. They will understand our story and save us all, Primrose and myself. It's the only way this can all be unwritten. And that's the pausing word, Wenla. That ends the third chapter of the quest for the player.
Yep.
And with that, that one that was called, I don't know. I think I'm not sure which one's bigger, this one or the fifth memory there. which one's darker? Because, you know, just the sense of someone saying the knife between the ribs. Which one do you guys think
is? They're both dark.
Okay.
They're both pretty dark. I got more of a chill from the demon. There's a thing in there. I felt personally that was more chilling. The Wendler one, the final one, that was when I started to feel like, right, what's going to happen next? Kind of getting that anticipation of, here's where we come in.
Yeah.
But now we know what's happened.
Right.
Now we have to go in and fix it. So it's a different sort of feeling I thought it evoked, but again, quite intense still.
Yeah. And you unlock the Wendla one by entering, at least I entered the word betrayed, looking on that, because they were talking about betrayal and the like. So are we ready to talk about how this all ties together and how this all wraps up in the end here?
Yes, let's go for it.
All right. So you enter in the final word. You then are able to head up to the needle and enter that phrase, Wendla. And with that, you basically learn everything that has been happening here with this quest. And I highly recommend at this point, everybody turn on your music, turn on your voiceover, and experience the quest for what this is. If you haven't been doing that, well, I think everyone, if you didn't have the music on, you missed a lot. And if you didn't have the voiceover on, you probably missed a lot too with this. But in any case, at the end, you search the needle and you use that phrase, and then you see the message. You feel time reassert itself and the area snaps back to the present. What is happening now is no longer a memory. You find Gale still laying down by the needle there, and you hear her just utter the words Buckthorn. And if you had been aware, you would see this glowing red bush at the bottom of the clearing as you head towards the house. And if you pick from this glowing red bush, you'll find that it is, of course, Buckthorn Bush. So you pick from the bush there, and you don't know what to do with it yet, but you end up with leaves and buckthorn berries with that. And you basically with that head on into the house. And you learn that, oh, these leaves and berries, as we saw in the previous chapter, the word buckthorn can be used to create some kind of potion or something that would ultimately heal up Megan. And you can see this when you examine the part of the buckthorn smelling salts that says this would wake anyone up. So you use that to wake Primrose up, and Primrose wakes and says, "What's happening? Where's Mom? Please find her. She's not safe by herself." And so obviously at this case, Primrose knows that something is horribly wrong, and then you need to head down and chat with Megan. And this is where the entirety of the quest comes together with Megan. So there's also a little book that we can read. What did you guys get from the book about the demons?
I missed that.
Okay,
I need to get that on my replay.
That actually told me about the demon and how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because I got the name of the demon from a memory too.
Yeah, so I missed that.
Find the book. So I need to go and find the book and read it. I haven't got there yet.
It should be on the bookshelf if you have completed the quest.
Okay.
It's a short little book. It basically says that, you know, you can heal Megan by, you know, uttering the name to her. It's, you say the right name, and we knew this from very on in the beginning that the name of the dragon, or sorry, the demon was Metam.
Dragon? Where'd the dragon come from?
I don't know. Demon, dragon, same thing. No, not really. But obviously, Metam, as we discovered in chapter 2, releases Megan from the curse, and then you have to create a potion to create a buckthorn salve, and then you use this salve on Gale, who is of course still up by the needle, and she'll talk with Megan and explain everything that's been going on in the quest. And
throughout this entire sort of process, I like, at least for me, it slowly started dawning on me, like, what was actually going on, and like, yeah, the actual reveal in the end, I actually saw it coming at that point.
Yeah. Me too.
Again, this is what I was thinking, what I thought about the the demon reveal in chapter
two.
In chapter three.
Oh,
that
I thought it was two.
That similar sort of feeling, kind of, oh, while that conversation is going on, you start to think, oh, maybe this is actually what's happened.
Yeah.
And then it gets confirmed maybe like 2 minutes later. So it kind of gives you a few little hints and then gives you the plot twist. So it kind of delivers on what it hints at, which I thought was great.
So you take the Buckthorn salve up to Gale and, you know, I have to say that at this point, everything that's been happening here with time travel and whatnot totally makes sense, because this is what they've been using the needle to do. It is revealed that Gale is actually one of our characters from the quest.
Do you want to say which one, or are we not spoiling it?
Let's say which one.
So Gale is Primrose, as it turns out, which I thought was quite an interesting twist. I don't think I've had enough time to really think about the repercussions of it and whether it actually makes sense, but in the moment it felt right.
Yeah,
like I saw this one coming, and like when it was revealed, I was like, yeah, that's now it all clicks, and
now it makes sense.
It comes full circle, basically, and it's the perfect ending of this story, right? It's just that's it. That's the end of the story, and there doesn't need to be a sequel because it's done. It's finished. That's the sense I got when that was revealed.
Yeah, I agree with what you said about it. It feels cyclic, almost, kind of feeding back into each other in a neat loop.
And that's what we were told this quest would be.
It's right for a bottle quest. It should be like a short story, self-contained. It's all over. And it's satisfying in itself. It doesn't need anything extra. And I think that's definitely been achieved. Like I said, I haven't really had time to think about whether the ending makes sense logically, but maybe I shouldn't do that just in case I find some plot holes. But
I don't think you'll find any plot holes.
Possibly not, no. But that particular ending felt right. It felt like the right thing to do.
So, sorry. Continue. Go.
I did think when Gale was talking to Megan that we'd have a choice on how we'd end it, kind of like at the end of One of a Kind.
Yep, I thought we were going that way too.
When we had no input whatsoever, that quite surprised me. But again, I think it worked.
Yeah, so there were three options for what they could do. The first one is that Megan can go back one more time to have another 30 days. But of course, Primrose would be fully aware of everything that's been happening. And it wouldn't be a good experience, let's just say. Another option is to just live out the remaining days that Primrose and Megan would have together. That's another option. And for a while, I thought they were going to take this one. But moving into go ahead.
I was about to say, if the choice had been the players, I would have picked that one.
Yeah, me too. Wait. Sarion?
No.
No.
I would have picked the first one.
Oh, wow. You would send her back for another 30 days?
No, the first one is to live out her days, right?
Okay, right. Yeah, that's the one we would pick.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the other way around.
No, I just shifted up the order here a bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but the third way is to use the power of the needle and bind Megan to the needle. She would forget all of her past experiences. She would effectively become one with the needle. She would effectively be reborn somewhere else, and she would get to live out her life, but she would have no memory of Megan as well with this. And being the mother that she is, and this is what hit me for this quest, is that this is such a hard choice. And could you imagine such a hard choice having to be made? This is what Megan chose. She chose to send Primrose back, bind her to the needle, and she would have no memories of her or anything that had happened. But she would have a life.
I mean, and I guess it's what a mother would do, right, in the end.
Yeah. So. And, I mean, could you just imagine the torment of that decision?
It's the real emotional payoff moment of the whole quest. Everything has been building to that choice, and it's kind of a... You do feel it. It is a bit of a kick, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's also like it's also the redemption for that character at the same time.
Though. It is. It's definitely
and
the...
that makes it such a poetic end.
And it's quite a simple moment of redemption as well. Like, it's a big, dramatic gesture. It's just, I'm putting her before me for once. Which is a really simple little decision to make, but it means a lot to her as a character and to all of them.
And because so, we've seen the flaws, we know it's not a trivial decision for her.
It's not easy for her at all.
Exactly, and that makes it so strong.
Yeah, it didn't feel trivial at all, and I am glad that, you know, we're all in agreement with this, is that we were able to, you know, see that, oh, this is a big deal. And I think the quest does what it needs to do because it has conveyed that successfully. So what I want to do before we just wrap up is there's a final letter from Gail here, and then we'll get final thoughts on this. It says, Megan, the needle's magic worked. Primrose survived and will live a long life. I send you love for making that decision. It cannot have been easy. By sending Primrose back in time, we tied her to the needle. This is something you know. By doing so, she woke up 3 years previous without any memory of who she was. She was alone, but she would not be for long. How do I know this? Because this is... And then we got a page turn here.
Very nicely placed page turn, by the way.
Because this is what happened to me. I woke up 3 years ago without memory. I was the one who was alone. You may have even been aware of this on some level. I am Primrose. I am your daughter. And I must now ask you for a favor. Perhaps the biggest favor anyone could ask of someone. I ask that you let me go. Let me run away. By staying with you for so long, I was avoiding something. Something that you may never understand. But now I will face it and do Primrose proud.
Yeah, it's a beautiful end to the quest. It's just...
Again, it feels right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... And at this point, you know, the depth associated with this, I don't know if we've ever had something like this before in RS. And I've been saying that throughout this entire segment here. But
right.
Is that an accurate statement?
Yes.
I think it's definitely a unique quest in the sense of there's no big world-altering events. And even though not all the quests are like that, a lot of stage quests are like that. I've said it before, it's personal, but it still feels as impactful as those big quests, and perhaps even more so because of how well it's handled the emotional side of things. And so, yeah, I agree. It's quite unique in the timeline of quests that we have.
Yeah. And the final words, I hope to return to you. This is not a goodbye, Gail.
Yeah. Great ending.
And that, folks, is The Needle Skips.
Go play it. Everyone go play it. It's great.
So, Yeah, no, I had to sort of interrupt my playthrough like midway through. So I did it in two sessions, and I played the first half on Monday. I think Shane hadn't started yet, and I told Shane, like, this is going to be my new favorite quest. Like, at that point, it was already great. And it delivered, right? It's my new favorite quest. Uncontested. Like, it's up there by a huge margin, because I've never felt so immersed in a quest. I've never felt so touched by a quest. And, you know, that a game that can inspire that to serve... Deserves prizes or something like that. Just gift him something. I don't know.
Give Maude Osborne an award.
Yes.
At least a pay rise.
No, can he write all the quests going forward?
Oh, he's done such a good job. I really appreciate quests when the people who know how to write write the quests. It makes such a difference. Like, it just brings a whole nother level of stuff. And I know some people don't care about the quest lines, and I know some people don't care about the storylines. I think they're wrong, personally, but ignoring that, it just adds so much more. It makes such a difference. Like, we've been singing its praises for the past hour and a half. Like, it just makes so much difference.
Yeah, but, okay, yeah, we have been singing it praises. Can we find anything wrong with this quest? There you go. 10 out of 10. We'll play again.
I think I need to think on it. But at the moment, there's nothing glaring, which is wonderful.
You know what I'd like to see from this? I'd like to see Mon Osborne's preferred path for the story.
Oh, that's a thought. Yes. How would he play it?
Like, I mean, we have said you can play this quest. You can enter in the words, and you can enter in as many or as few of the words as you want, and you're going to get the general gist of the story. But what would the lead designer, which order would the lead designer of this quest have us take it?
That's a very good question.
Is it in order of all the different memories that are in each of the chapters? Is that the preferred order?
I think this is a question that is not to be asked. You know, there is no right order. The order is different for everyone.
Well,
and the experience you had is unique. I think Osborne will tell you the same, though. Like, there is no one order that tells the story. I believe all the orders are equally valid.
That's a good point. But it would still be nice to know how did he intend it to be played? Because every time, like, I write short stories for fun. Every time you write something, you write it with an intention of how you want it to be experienced by the person who reads it. So I think a similar thing applies here. What was his intention? How did he want us to experience it? And if he wanted us to experience it, as in every person gets a different one, every person discovers things in a different order and gets a slight different thing from it, then that's fantastic. But it would still be nice to know, I think.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's definitely a question to add to the Mon Osborne list.
Yes.
All right. So let's get to the bigger questions here. What do we do with the needle going forward? Elder artifact clearly in place on Gielinor.
So
that we can interact with.
I have always had a problem with RuneScape lore. A big one. And that's the fact that there are about 10,000 World Guardians running around the world. If not more. It bothers me. It bothers me deeply. But the needle could be the solution. What if we are in that time loop that the needle made? What if each player is the same person experiencing the same thing over and over again?
So our experience on RuneScape is effectively the simulation, is what you're saying.
Yes, pretty much. We replay out one iteration of that loop. And, you know, when it all ends, if it all ends, we go back and we're back on Tutorial Island and it all starts over again.
I saw a theory on Reddit that was something similar to that, but it was a kind of a rationalization of max. So kind of every time we get reset, as it were, we retain some knowledge from the previous
iteration,
life in inverted commas. We can max out.
That's
the theory I thought. That's interesting.
This is a very fun idea to entertain. I have one huge caveat that they cannot start doing. The needle cannot become a plot device to retcon the Sixth Age.
Oh, definitely not. We can't do that.
We are heading towards the storylines that deal with the Elder Gods, Zautak, next year. We know that. And we know that if the Elder Gods are not pleased with what we have done, they're going to blow the world apart and start over. The needle cannot be a way to just get out of that.
You're right.
The question is,
don't do that.
Have the Elder Gods, how did the Elder Gods actually say they were going to destroy it and start over? Starting over could be using the needle, getting rid of all the progress.
I think they consume the anima, though, don't they? They would consume the anima and just sap it full of life, or sap the life out of it.
That's the point of the anima cycle. Like they produce it, they refine it until you get the perfect world of Gilenor in this cycle, and then they consume that to generate the next cycle.
Yeah, so it's
all faring around each other. But you're right that they can't start using it as a way a get out of jail free card, because that would be lazy.
Because I mean, there are many many people who say that we jumped the shark with. The World Wakes, killing off Gothics and going down this whole epic Sixth Age storyline. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. And, you know, as much as players would like to go back to a time before that happened and do things differently, maybe, I think there's a 98% chance that if they did that, it would be seen as a cop-out.
It would be a cop. It would be lazy, because like a lot of what the Sixth Age storyline has been dealing with is consequences of actions and making things matter. So using a plot device like the needle to kind of say, oh, but it doesn't matter, we can just do it again, would be so lazy. It would be so bad. I don't think it would do that.
I'm kind of laughing here and also a bit sad at the same time. I will explain.
Can I just get you to hold that point for 1 second?
Okay.
Zautak apparently, like Zaros, is one of those creatures that is transplane aware. So he's aware of different iterations, different timescapes and whatnot. And we're heading that way. So that's just another subtle shift that the needle might play a role going forward, but go ahead, Sirion.
Like I said, I chuckled a bit, and I'm also a bit sad that we get this amazing quest, and we shift to the lore talk, and the first thing we do is talk about how Jagex can mess it up. Like, we've come to that point.
I didn't mean it like that.
The first thing we do when something comes out is, how can they make abuse of this? Like, you know, the nice thing about this quest is they put this thing in a corner of the world. They didn't involve big guys like Sliskay, or like, they didn't make a big deal out of it. It's an Eldor artifact, yes. All the lore fans can get their chunk of lore, whatever they get out of this, because it's an Eldor artifact. But it's there in the corner. Nobody has to care. If we never see a thing of this again, most people would be happy with that.
Yeah,
right?
We'll be fine.
And that makes it so nice. This quest doesn't force Jagex to use it in upcoming content, because it's so nice and contained. It's there, period.
That's true. Yeah, that is completely right. I mean, it has been confirmed that it will be used later on, but again, it is nicely hidden away. And even, you're right, if it's not used again, then it's had its moment.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And to be fair, the only reason I mentioned the potential idea of retconning is not because I want Jagex to do it, not because I think they will do it. It's just because there has been a lot of discussion in the Sixth Age storyline amongst various sources and whatnot that it's something that people would like to do differently next time. And that's the only reason I mention it. It's not because I think they would go down that path. Okay.
They're in the Fifth Age.
Yeah. So.
Literally living in the past.
And I mean, we also had the word Wenla. I'm not sure I want to read much into that. I mean, aside from the Elder God Wen. I'm not sure there's much to say on that.
Are Eld artifacts linked to particular gods? I mean, we know the Stone of, but do we know if the other ones are, do they have particular links to particular Elder gods?
I don't know.
Don't know.
I don't remember.
Because there's 12 of them. There's 12 Elder artifacts and, oh, how many Elder gods? I've forgotten.
Six.
Six. Is that 5 plus the one that's a mystery, or 6 plus the one that's a mystery?
I believe it's 6 in total.
6 in total.
Yeah, the one that's a mystery. I can check that for you. Let's see.
Already ahead of you.
Okay. Who are our elder gods? Jazz.
The elder gods really are Jazz, Fu, Wen, Bic, and Ma. Those are the five of them.
And then there's a sixth one.
Oh, there's also a sixth, which he describes as not being of form, but rather something else.
Yes. I have theories about that, capital T theories, but I'm not sure if I should say it right here. But I'm just thinking maybe, wild speculation, there's 12 artifacts. Maybe a couple of them are linked to each elder god. Maybe this is Wen's. And then the kiln would be... the Tsar's version. Which one was she? The lava one?
Full.
And then obviously the catalyst is the Stone of Jazz. So maybe there's... I don't know. Just spitballing there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an area where we could spend a lot of time and discussion on. But
we'll see how it pans out next year.
Yeah, all right. Sirion, did you get your points mentioned that you wanted to bring
in? I get all my points across. I'm a master at this.
Okay, you did. Narrative engagement and game mechanics, check. Your lore theory, what's your lore theory? We didn't hear about that one.
I did tell you about that one. It was the one that players are just iterations of themselves.
Oh, okay. All right.
Brought back in time by the needle. All
right, fair enough.
To become the world guardian over and over again.
And we talked about how well it's written, so that's good. I'm content to move on because we've been on this for an hour 25 already, and we have many other things to discuss.
Let's move on.
All right. Absolutely fine by me.
I'm gonna abbreviate the patch notes here. There was a good number of patch notes this week. Oh, we didn't give the quest a rating. We need to do that. But I think
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
All right, so 5 out of 5 then. We go on a scale of 5 here.
Oh, okay.
No, 10 out of 5. Okay. Screw your 5 skill, it's 10, period.
All right, fair enough. 400th quest point, head on over to Quest Caravan, get your magic dice, 2.5 million GP, roll, see what you get.
Don't forget to get support the dragon either.
And you get a new pet. Yeah.
Thank you, Mod Kylar. Anyways. Bunch of patch notes this week for clans and the like. Permission to restrict who can view the ban list to admin plus by default, but also allow a clan toggle so all recruits can see who's banned if they wish. Have we looked at that yet, Sirion?
We just kept it as it is. I think it's fine.
Added an additional warning to clan owners trying to leave a clan that they can just demote themselves to remain in the clan.
Yeah, this felt like one of the patches that's not really a problem you have to solve here, except for people's stupidity, right?
Yeah. Owners can now demote themselves to overseer or lower. Added a job title replacement owner to allow the clan to see who would assume ownership of the clan if the owner stepped down. And also a bunch of event broadcaster reminders have been added for when the event is 15 minutes, 12 hours, and 24 hours away. So that's good for clans who do events. Some changes to mobile. Added a combat indicator, which they're saying is a flashing red border when you have an interface open that covers the full screen. We talked about that, Sirion, in the mining and smithing talk that we had this week, how these interfaces take up the full screen.
Mm-hmm.
Added a special drag and drop area on the left-hand side of the backpack on mobile. I don't know what this looks like, so I don't have that.
I haven't been able to check, I'm afraid. I can send you a screenshot after the show if you want.
Fair enough.
At some point.
At the relevant magic levels, a low alchemy, then later a high alchemy drop area exists below this area. And lastly, once you have passed the point in the tutorial, a disassembly drop area is added as well. So they're basically making it so that, you know, as we have at the bottom of our backpack in RS3 NXT desktop, you can just drag to the various spots and have things disassembled or alked on mobile. for continuing fixes for the achievement bonanza, the Dailyscape and Portnite achievements will no longer reset after completion if their respective streak is broken. Could you imagine doing 13 out of 14 Portnite achievements or Dailyscape achievements and having to
That's already what happens. I think the point is that it resets after you get it. So like
after you get the achievement.
Yeah, so it's not 13 out of 14, it's 15 out of 14, then it resets. So that's a bit awkward.
Yeah.
They fixed that one.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that happening. and they fixed an issue where some achievements weren't counting towards total achievement completion, including the port's armor achievement. Also, the farming skill cape perk can now be used to unlock the smartest harvest achievement. I got that one. And a bit of an oddball one here. If you have completed Shield of Arav before the quest rework was completed without finishing the quest, you can now properly complete the quest.
There's a story behind that one, I think.
Oh, okay. What's the story?
I don't know. That sounds like there's a very specific.
Sounds like there's people who started the quest before and couldn't finish it because they changed it.
Yeah.
Very specific bug report.
Anti-griefing has been added to all of the skill Chompa Hunter areas. That's good, because you know those things blow up if you attack them, and you don't want that happening. The bug reporter has been visually updated, including support center links for specific bug categories. That's good. That thing hasn't been updated in years.
That's good. It needed a bit of a refresh, so it's been updated like that.
Yeah. And finally, this is perhaps one of the biggest ones that we've seen in a while. The skybox and filter options, accessible from the world map's right-click menu, has been reworked. Skyboxes are in one tab, filters are in another tab, and in an advanced tab, various settings can be saved and set as a preset. And basically what you can do with this is you can change the sun color, the sun ambience, the fog color, fog depth, as well as volumetric lighting colors and density.
I love the skybox options. Like they look so cool. There's been some really hideous.
Yeah.
Reblocking the particularly ugly ones, which is just hilarious. But I can waste hours just playing around with the skybox. It's such a nice little option.
Yeah. It's going to be good for people who have accessibility options who need a little bit more contrast put into the game world. You know, you can, make a darker sun and have items and fog appear better. The only potential downside of this is that it is truly advanced and that you need to enter RGB color values to make something happen.
Yeah.
I didn't spend too much time
playing around.
Yeah. I didn't spend too much time with it because I'm fine most times with it, but I did come up with a really interesting preset that effectively makes everywhere look as bright as Ashdale is, which, I mean, if you like the way Ashdale looks, you could do that. We don't talk enough about Ashdale in terms of how groundbreaking it was, but it's an option here if you wanted to do that. So I wish Tanis was here for this, because this is an accessibility option for him because he's colorblind. So it would be interesting to see. Yeah, it would be interesting to see how he would change the fog and whatnot to add a little bit more color that he could see to objects.
Right.
But I'm sure we'll talk more about that at some point in the future with him. Sierra, do you have any thoughts about opening up this kind of advanced skybox tool to everyone?
I think it goes to speak about the extreme customizability that RuneScape has. I don't think it's really necessary. I think accessibility options are good. I think giving this fine-tuned control is probably not really necessary. But hey, it's cool. The old one didn't really work well. I think they came up with something cool. So
yeah, they outgrew it. Why not? So it's been fixed. All right. That's it for the patch notes this week. Next up is Slime is of the Essence. Little community event. I don't have much to say about this, so, I mean, if you guys have anything, feel free, but it's basically a little community event where you get some tools each day, you head on over there, and you use a different skill to chip away at this big King Slime object.
I played it for the first time today. I hate to say this because there are some really funny little touches and there's some very kind of classic RuneScape jokes and references in there that are, you know, they make you smile. They're quite sweet. But the actual event itself, you kind of have to wonder why it's there.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem relevant to anything, especially so soon after the Halloween event.
And before we get started on December Christmas stuff.
Yeah. And they're basically, well, the December event's going to be a permanent fest, isn't it? But especially so soon after the whole month of a skilling event over Halloween, which felt more relevant. So I just kind of wonder, what's the point of this? Why are they putting it in? I mean, it's quite cute. There's some interesting little things in there, and there'll be the end of it. But yeah, I've just been wondering why.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I've liked the past events quite a lot. Like especially one in Falador was a lot of fun. I think what was it, the sword of some sort?
Oh, the
sword
of Radovan.
Yeah, exactly. That was a lot.
Fun.
And this, it's so dull. It's so dull. And I'm really disappointed in it, to be honest. I had expected more of it.
Yeah. And with that, I'll just move us on. But first, there's your personal progress, where for every tick that you get, you'll get a mystery box. And then there's the community progress. Unlocks the Slime Hunter cosmetic override at level 1. At level 3, you get the Slime Ball and Slime Launcher. At level 5, you get tier 65 hybrid Slime Hunter armor and the Salty emote. Tier 7 is tier 70 Slime Hunter armor and the Slip and Slime rest override. Then at tier 9, you get the Slime Pet, Lit Gloop, and the tier 75 Slime Hunter armor. And that's for community progress. And your personal progresses depend on, or rather, govern how many mystery boxes you get.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get golden tools on Treasure Hunter, buy them with rune coins, and you can do that right at the event. But beyond that...
I have loyalty points.
Oh, loyalty points too. Okay, so they brought that option back. I didn't actually look at that person this time. I just assumed it was rune coins.
The news posted loyalty points. I haven't actually checked it, though.
Oh, right on that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I have anything to mention left for Slime is of the Essence, because quite clearly for this podcast, time is of the essence, right? All right. Moving on to the dev Q&A. They haven't done a general Q&A for a while. I'm just going to run through these and, you know, stop me if you guys want to talk about any of these points. This is one that us here at Informer and Update are very pleased about and we're looking for. Mod Kelpie is putting together a larger plan for 2019 and beyond to move the game in a specific direction, i.e. a roadmap, which I think is good. I don't know if it'd be a wise idea to share that with the player base.
I'm relieved they're not, because I think what this might get me a few, I don't know, people might not like, but I think Jagex has a habit of oversharing.
Yep.
And it comes back to bite them.
Yep.
It's quite unusual, I think, in a game studio to share as much as they do. And we're very, very lucky to have a studio that shares and developers that share as much as they do. But I get the sense that they're holding back a little. Come back to bite them over the past 18 months or so, and we're a bit annoyed about it. They're probably a bit annoyed about it, so they're maybe kind of resetting it a bit. So I'm glad they're not telling us the big picture just yet.
Yeah, you would be entirely right on that.
I agree.
They want to graphically update the whole surface world. They haven't done the best in the past for setting up
Yay!
The game for this.
Adoring,
for
please.
Success in updating the area.
Oh yes, please update the West. It
what
desperately
they
needs
want to do is they want to be able to reuse assets like crates, barrels, and trees, because he said, you know, someone creates, say, a barrel update for Catherby, they now have 100 barrel models in game for various places or crates.
That actually makes sense. Like, they're the way they used, like, if you look at, like, the old areas, like, the walls all look the same, right? The assets all look the same. And you look at the new areas, and they're highly specialized and modeled specifically to that place. And that's probably what's causing these graphical reworks to sort of slow down. So that makes you think, why don't they just go back to sort of the reusable form? Maybe they can't do some of the awesome stuff they do, but, you know, I think everybody would be happy if they at least fix the textures and make everything look at least a bit nicer.
Yeah,
definitely.
They want to aim to do a lot of it more rapidly in the past. And the question actually came up because they asked about whether or not we could have the trees and the ground textures from the needle skips area worldwide.
Yeah, I was going to say that because it kind of points out how in desperate need of a rework that part of the world is, having all beautiful new surroundings just whack in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So it needs doing at some point. But they've got a lot of other stuff to do at the moment.
And the follow-up for that question is, what's the direction for 2019? They say that the direction for the story and the direction being taken is to make questing great again. Those were the exact words that they used. no new announcements, so other than what was said at RuneFest. Mod Stew is also looking at putting in a new view in the quest interface so that you can see quests as a in lore order. As in, you know, if you want to make sure you're doing them in chronological order so you're not missing out on anything, there'll be a way for them to do that in-game eventually, which is
good.
That's
really good, especially with, like, the Elder Quests.
Yep.
Starting from novice again, so.
Yeah, and this was actually asked as part of that question is, you know, RuneScape is a 17-year-old game. It doesn't make sense for someone in 2019 starting a new quest line to have to go back and do the 6th Age quests and then do all the 5th Age quests before that, too. So, combat is, they want to make more accessible. Rather than focusing on the top 2% as they did with Solak, they want to focus on the top 35 to 50% of combat players, so mid to high level, and the level of difficulty here would be in relation to God Wars Dungeon 1.
About bloody time.
yeah. The mythical construction rework was asked about. We're more likely to get new construction methods before the player-owned house rework, such as on the surface world. Which makes sense, okay. I think.
That makes fair. That makes sense.
Continuing on about the mining and smithing beta now, they were asked, could we have the chickaxe for participating in the mining and smithing beta? They said, you know, we would like to do that, but we don't have a quota set for spending X amount of time in the beta, and they don't have a specific way of overriding a pickaxe without using the cosmetic override system that exists in game. But something in the future may indeed happen with the chickaxe for those who are concerned.
What is the chickaxe?
That was the pickaxe you got in the beta that let you do all the weird little things with your character. The February beta.
Which bit? I don't remember this. The latest one?
No, the mining and smithing beta that happened this February.
Oh, that one. I don't remember it. Okay, cool.
Yeah, the chickaxe. Or no, was that then? I don't know. We apparently had an episode title last December called The Chickaxe.
Okay, I believe you.
I thought it was to do with the beta, but yeah, this was last December. Huh. Fascinating. You know, it says something when your podcast appears on the top result of Google for chickaxe. question was asked about trimmed masterwork armor. They're probably going to reduce the cost of it because it's so expensive to create. That's the tier 92 power armor.
Mm-hmm.
They want to add an extra benefit to it other than it just being tier 92 power armor because it's made by the players. But they say it's a hard place to figure out where it should sit without making it too good.
Oh, the joys of game design.
Yep. And mm-hmm. They aim to have a prototype in place by this coming week.
Nice. Oh, the joys of crunch in game design.
Yeah, because this thing's supposed to launch in the first week of January.
Mm-hmm.
The question was asked, can we get more action bars, bank space, or bank presets? There's no plans for more presets or action bars, and in regards to bank space, they're technically at the limit if the amount they can provide with the way the current bank is designed.
Bank rework.
Yeah, and they also said it's actually a physical data limit, too.
Oh.
Mm-hmm, apparently.
There's no such thing as a physical data limit.
I know, today, especially today, right?
Especially today, yeah. Data's cheap.
Yeah. They'll get round to it eventually. We've just got to keep badgering them about it.
Yeah, a question was asked about weapon diversity, the weapon diversity changes we talked about from Game Jam, if that could justify 120 combat skills. You know, on the surface, I don't see this as a good question to ask, but nonetheless, they answered it. They're not related at all. They said weapon diversity is breadth for combat, whereas going to 120 is depth. And they're reluctant to hand out tier 95s because players don't need that kind of power. Things are already being killed too quick with tier 92s.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yep. And that's also why they don't want to go to 120 as well, because, you know, going to 120 strength or 120 attack increases accuracy and strength, making you hit harder. So, combining high-tier PVM with high-tier skilling, this is the best part of this Q&A. Mining and smithing is the prototype, and numerous people on the couch said they missed the days when skillers fed the PVM economy.
Hair, hair.
About damn time. About damn time. iOS beta for mobile, soon TM, they say. Android is being used for UI and gameplay focuses.
I think when the Android beta first came out, after the first live stream they had after that, they said they ran into so many issues with Android, like that got so much feedback. It didn't really make sense to them to let more people in, because that would just increase the amount of feedback.
Yeah.
And I think the timeline they mentioned was somewhere in the new year at the earliest.
Yeah. And at this point, that's soon TM, factoring in the Christmas break and the whatnot.
Yeah, so that's fair.
True.
Now, this one was asked to Mod Raven, and we can discuss a bit of this. Post-quest for the needle. Raven is already working on some content, including content that players may not have thought of yet.
You're suggesting we discuss another lore point. Do you want a 3-hour episode?
Well, I'm not saying to guess what Mod Raven is working on. I'm just saying he is.
That's good news.
Hell, the needle is the portal to Abana.
No, don't say
Ooh.
It.
Continuing on, concepts exist for more raids in game. They're at the concept stage. I mean,
concepts exist for many things, I believe. So that's a really empty statement.
They probably should.
Like, concepts are really easy.
Yeah. Concept exists for a flying car too, but that doesn't exist. On Game Jam topics, time has been set aside for the most recent releases. Ninja-y things, or the Ninja team is looking at working on a lot of the things, packaging them up a bit more. And for Sirion, they may have things such as a fire-making week.
Woohoo!
That would be nice. Get mod. That was Mod Shrew's update, wasn't it?
There's multiple fire-making updates, and most of them are really good. I really enjoyed it. They're really trying to give that skill actually a use at higher levels. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be helpful a bit with mining and smithing, but this actually adds like a unique item at higher levels that you can use in the other. I think this is Mod Timbo that did it, right? The incense burners?
Yes.
Yeah, that was Timbo.
Oh, those are so great. Bounty hunter removal is largely done. Expect that to be progressed on early next year. It's being worked on by the Ninja team. Mobilizing armies removal is done, signed off on, approved. It just needs to go into the game update pipeline. Question about the Java community. 10 to 15% of the people still use the Java client. They'll get rid of it one day. It doesn't affect mobile development at all. But, of course, getting rid of it will make things easier for the developers. And then come the two big whammies near the end. How come you don't poll the community? And they say, well, we try and complete work from the previous poll before beginning the next one. But we also don't like questions that don't help us. Players wind up saying they want us to do both when something is polled.
If they don't like the questions, they need to ask different questions.
Yeah. You know, the classic example of this is Prif versus Invention. I'm glad we got Prif first, but, you know, after people heard about Invention, they wanted it.
Yeah. I think the point of finishing up one poll before starting the next one is, you know, perfectly valid. Not entirely sure I like the size of that.
Yeah.
Don't like messages, or maybe, I don't know.
They also said that they're not fans of the way Rune Labs panned out, so that's good.
That was a disaster.
Yeah, it was.
Aquarium. Who wants the aquarium?
Or waterfall fishing.
Oh, boy.
I think that's probably...
99 fishing.
Yeah. Waterfall fishing is probably my least favorite update that's been added to the game in a long time. But, and then another big whammy. Where's the line between useful discussion and they're just ranting at me? And they said, we love it when people send us negative but constructive feedback, but they should be fired is not constructive, and a torrent of screaming it also just isn't useful. And, you know, it's good to hear them talk about this, because I feel like every other week we're talking about this on the podcast. So it needs to get out there to a wider audience too. So
it's not that hard to be constructive. Like, by all means, criticize them, but it's not that hard to be constructive about it, I think.
Yeah, agree.
It's just manners, really, isn't it? Like, it's not difficult.
All right. That's pretty much it for the Q&A. I'm going to move us on to one final piece of news, and this is a rather ironic piece of news, believe it or not, because last month we had an agility skill month, and as you guys are aware, that brought up a good amount of... discussion in the community, let's just say, about how Skill of the Month should continue going forward and the like. But because of this, and it's interesting they chose agility first, Jagex is running what they're calling a skilling cup for clans, and their first skill is going to be for agility. And what they want to do is do this as a trial run in the future to see how clans could compete at various skills. So basically, what's going to happen with this is that you'll actually be able to enter any clan that has at least 10 members for this, and the data will automatically be picked up and sent to Jagex, and it'll take each clan's top 10 highest players and combine them into a total XP, with the highest clan being our winners. This is a much improved process, which should make determining our winners and distributing the rewards much more quickly than before. So this means that a clan with 500 members can't win by sheer XP. It's all down to each clan to be as efficient as possible. And if you're at 200 million agility XP, fear not, your XP session will be tracked. And now here comes the good part about this. Silverhawk boots, brawling gloves, lamps, dwarven tools, bonus XP... Saren Symbol, Livid Farm and whatnot, one-time XP award from Ape McKinn's Mask. Pretty much every way to get bonus agility XP, aside from running agility course, including Silverhawk Boots, isn't allowed. So.
Good.
This is, I think, a good thing to do. And, you know, obviously they're not going to have the infrastructure to provide data to allow us to run our own competitions on that, but I think it's a start to having a discussion as to how people can compete, at least on the clan level, for something like this, right? So
interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I don't know when this is going to be. I think it's going to be probably in the new year by the looks of it here. But for first place, you're going to get access to the Crystal Avatar clan sticky thread. You're going to have your clan thread stickied in recruitment, and a 12% XP boost and 100% faster capping, and a player-specific title that displays their clan name for a month.
Oh, I like that. That'll be good.
Yeah.
So Clan Quest has to really get on it now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many people we have that like agility, but hey.
it doesn't matter whether they like it or not. They can just do it.
Yeah, and I mean, we're looking for
them into doing it. Right?
We're looking for the top 10. So effectively, what you want to get is you want to get a team of maybe what 20 to 30 people, some of which are probably going to come into the top 10 of the entire community. Mm-hmm. In case some disappear. And places 2nd through 10 are going to get access to the Crystal Avatar, as well as a 9% XP boost and 75% faster capping for 1 month.
Nice.
So I think this is a good way of doing it. And I would love, you know, if this is successful, to see a way of having this spread out to the wider community. So.
Same.
All right. Let's move on to questions. But first, I'll take a moment to tell everybody about our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB. And, you know, it's American Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving in the United States. And here at RSBNB Update, we're always very thankful for many things, including the wonderful community out there that lets us do this podcast. Everyone who takes part, sends questions in, works towards completing the show and whatnot. But we must also give a good thank you this week to our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/RSBNB, who are Cody Chi, Kyle, and Brock H. Thank you guys for the wonderful support that you have given to RSBNB Update and to everyone else out there who listens and contributes to the podcast. This podcast would not be doable without you. So if you want to learn more about our Patreon page, you can find it at patreon.com/RSBNB. Basically, it works as follows. At $15 a month in contributions, we'll be doing our monthly Bit podcast, which we release near the tail end of every month. These are released initially to Patreon supporters exclusively. When we reach $30 a month, we will be doing something called Inside RSBNB Update, where you will gain an inside look at RSBNB Update, including interviews with our hosts and production team, and basically get a chance to learn how the podcast comes together. And at $50 a month, should we ever reach that tier by way of gracious listeners, we'll be doing the RSBNB Update Roundtable on the first Saturday of every month, where you can join us in the RSBNB Update Discord for a roundtable on anything and everything RuneScape-related. And we did one of these on Double XP Weekend. That was pretty fun, wasn't it, Sirion?
I enjoyed that. Yeah, it was good.
And we had a good wide-ranging discussion on things. And if we reach $99 a month, you'll get to experience movie night with Shane and Tanis, where we'll have a look at some movies and maybe watch some good Star Trek flicks in the RSBNB Discord. And
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that would be fun. Because you'll have our commentary along the way, too. But you can get started with this at patreon.com/RSBNB for as little as $1 a month. If you want to be gracious and up that to $3 a month, you'll receive a special rank on Discord, high-quality stereo AAC version of the podcast, in addition to helping us fund RSBNB Update. And if you really want to go all out, you can send $5 a month, in which you get a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. And yeah, clip show is coming in a month or so. So that should be really fun. All that and more at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thank you once again to Cody, Kyle, and Brock for your wonderful support of this podcast. All right, you guys ready for some questions?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right. So the first one's an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day guys, it's Parnassius here with a little discussion topic for you this week. In a game that has always been so unique in its quest lines and the rewards from them, RuneScape really seems to be moving away from that uniqueness. We've seen the reduction in the amount of quests go down more and more each year, and seemingly a lot less emphasis is being put on them. Now, with the release of the new mining and smithing reworks, we see that there is absolutely no quest requirements for anything involved in them, with the exception of the Imkando pickaxe, which, let's face it, probably isn't worthwhile for the time involved just to be able to augment it, unless they release a truly awesome perk for it. For me, half the fun of doing quests was being able to unlock something better in-game, whether it be access to, you know, mining plots or have the ability to receive an item to help in certain skills, upgrade certain tools and such. Now that they have removed any quest requirements from mining and smithing, I feel that it hurts that side of the game. Also, with the way mining is now, I fear we may see an influx of new bots into the real game of RS3, as they will simply be able to level all the way to 99 and access every single tier of ore available with no roadblocks. I know we have a great antibody system in the game, as opposed to the OSRS version. However, I also feel it hasn't been tested properly, since OSRS is the easier game for botting and has an inferior detection system. Let's face it, mining bots over there make a ton more GP per hour, and since Jagex do not deter players from swapping gold, it makes more sense for the real-world traders to bot there rather than here. Now that there is going to be 7 new tiers of ore that can only be mined and will not come in as PVM drops, which is a super fantastic update by the way, it's only logical to expect that those same real-world traders will start looking at this game with interest again. Even just the regular player may be tempted to start a couple of his or her own alt accounts and run botting programs on them to help boost their main accounts. I'd hope this wouldn't happen, but sadly, knowing the human race, it's always looking on a way to get an edge over the next person. I know I've brought this up before, but with the release of this otherwise awesome update in the game, should Jagex now look into ways to deter gold swapping and make it illegal to do so? Other than the concerns I have talked about, I have truly loved pretty much all aspects of this update, although I would still love to have seen sort of at least smithing taken to a true 120 level for mastery, and truly hope that the community embraces it and that the new armors we can produce will be both desired by the PVMers and profitable for skillers. So anyway, my question is, should some of the higher tiers of mining skill still have at least some quest requirements, and should there be some requirements for the highest tiers of the new pickaxes to circumvent the chances of being botted? As always, happy scaping to you, and a very happy Thanksgiving to all our American friends.
I don't think botting is going to be a problem.
I mean, I think there's a pretty good bot detection system in the game now, and I'm pretty sure that it will be fine. It'll be fine.
I think a lot of that was speculation, and I don't really see what basis it has. I mean, it is a valid concern. Like, botting could increase if there aren't the requirements that, you know, bots could just plow through, but we don't really have much information to really see what's going to happen or not. So the concern about it being locked behind, I think we have to bear in mind that tragically, absolutely tragically, the questing community is not the main community in RuneScape. So locking stuff behind quests for most people is an inconvenience. So it kind of makes sense to not have things locked behind quests if they're skilling things, to me.
I still think you get like some stuff. Like, you get the best pickaxe. You need the Imkando one for that. That's a pretty big deal, I think. You need a pretty far along quest in the Endor series. And, you know, quests don't necessarily have to unlock new things, but they do unlock sort of, they make things easier, right? Like, if you want light anima ore, you need to get into the Elflands. If you want to get access to like 7 stones, you need to do Light Within. No, not the Light Within. Plague Ants. There you go. And you also get advantages for doing quests, right? Bainite ore is available in 2 places, the Wilderness and the Glacier Cave. If you don't want to go to the Wilderness to get your Bainite ore, you want to do Ritual of the Majorat to get the Bainite ore in the Glacier Cave. So, you know, doing quests will still give you, like, better mining locations, maybe a few ores and stuff that you can't get otherwise. You know, it still gives you advantages. It's just not a strict requirement to get to the end of the skill. And that's how it should be, I think. Quests should give you an advantage, but it should not be a requirement.
I agree.
And that's one of the great things about the mining and smithing beta that I really liked, is that every ore is accessible in-game without a quest. Every ore, you can just
light anima ore, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, you can go to the desert for it.
I thought there was only one rock.
No, there's one in the desert as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
Accessible. And you know, I think you're right that the best, you know, for Quest we got the Imkando pickaxe, and when that update came out, I didn't spend too much time down there, and I don't even have that, and I consider myself a quester. So it's something that, you know, unless you were leveling along as you were leveling up as you were questing and you felt that you needed this pickaxe, it's something that people may or may not have. It's not something that everyone's going to have to get pickaxe of earth and song. And, you know, if you're going for 200 mil mining XP, you're going to want that augmented pickaxe. So I think it's in a good place in regards to questing. So I think that's fine.
And I would hope that, like, I think there's still some potential for, like, dwarven quest lines. It's a lot like new things couldn't come along, right?
Yeah, precisely. And, you know, in regards to bots, and thankfully the question wasn't about old school wealth transfers, because we could talk about that forever. But, and I would like to talk about that forever, but not today, but we'll keep that as a topic for another show, maybe, or in the future. But I just want to say about the botting system. Yeah, sure. This is going to put a increased light on the systems that are in place in RS3. And, you know, from my understanding of it is that the systems in place for botting in RS3 are both to handle the, let's just say, the simple bots that do one thing. And then there's also systems in place to handle the bots that hook into the game itself. And the RS3 client is pretty well robust in order to handle from that, based on what I know and people that I've talked to. I don't want to say too much about how these work, because I don't feel that's a good thing to be talking about. So, but I think we'll be fine at the end of the day. And
I think if there are problems, Jagex is in the position to solve them. With RS3.
Like, yeah, and I mean, we saw this when they brought in the heuristics-based bot detection software, in that, you know, it wasn't being effective and it was counteracted. Then they made it even more effective, and we really haven't had any problems since then. So we know it can adapt and whatnot, and they can adapt it. So I don't think we'll be having too big of a problem. So I think we can leave it at there. I would love to discuss the wealth transfer, but we are at 2+ hours already, so I'm going to try and be brief. The next one is from Chodo from Clan Quest. Hoods, guys. Good to see the old noobs here, and glad to see such a lorehound as Diana in the podcast. It's kind of difficult to come up with questions when you know might have already answered them while you talk, so I'm going to try and be a bit clever. A rare occasion. Seize the moment. And ask good questions for a change. So, the needle skips. I honestly didn't have the confidence about this at all. I thought it would have been even worse than the Gobi quest, but to my surprise, for the first time probably since Sliske's endgame, I went to the start point, plugged in my earphones, and enjoyed. I took my time, I didn't rush to complete it because it was awesome. I couldn't enjoy the graphics because I have a potato laptop, but everything else was just great. But enough chit-chat. Questions time. The quest was different in a lot of aspects. One, is this the future of questing? No more fetch an egg, flour, and milk, but voice-acted involving stories? Number two, do you think it would be reasonable if Jagex started developing more content like this? Number three, what is the thing you love the most, and what is the one thing you disliked about the quest as a whole? I think we already answered that one. And I personally love Megan's song. Which was your favorite? And number five, will we see more of Primrose and the Needle? Will the World Guardian need to go back and fix his or her past mistakes? Huge congratulations to those who created this great quest, and thanks to Shane, Sirion, and Diana for giving me 2 hours to enjoy. Unhoods. No, I don't think this is the future of questing, just because voice-acted quests are expensive to create and require an additional layer of planning and development to them, and that you can't have a dialogue change.
Yeah, I think that's the main problem. That's, I think, one of the main reasons why they stopped doing voice-acted quests. Like, they tried doing it for a while, and then it just got, I don't want to say inconvenient, because that makes it sound like they didn't, like, they just discarded it, but it just didn't fit, I think, with their style of developing quests, which is a shame, but a respectable decision, nonetheless. I think it's nice they reserve it for the special quest.
I think this quest was a one-off, right? It works as a one-off. I don't think if every quest worked like it, it would remain as powerful and good. I think this is a one-off. It happened. It's great. Maybe there will be another one like this. Maybe like the 500th quest point or something like that. But if every quest became like this, I don't think it would work. I think it would stop working. I think it works because it's special and unique. But
yeah, I agree.
I don't expect quests to change into this pattern. Though I do expect them to take lessons out of this, what people liked, and maybe bringing them back into other quests. That would be awesome.
Yeah. I think in terms of the second question, it's reasonable for Jagex to start developing more content like this. I would love to see more heavily story-driven quests and well story-driven quests, because those are the ones I enjoy personally. So in that sense, yes, more like this.
Great. I mean, I enjoyed the small scale of this, the intimacy, and, you know, it made me think that there's this epic great story of Sliske, and, you know, it have maybe people are going to be mad at me for this, but it never really caught on, that big quest line, right? I didn't really care much, and I don't really care much for the upcoming Elder God stuff. I really like these small things much, much more. So if Jagex just stopped all the big storyline stuff and started doing all these old quests, you know, that's what made RuneScape so nice to start with. I think there's lots of small and daring stories in the game, and I think that's really unique. You have this one, like Romeo and Juliet was really, like, it's a, like, really old-fashioned example, but it's like a small circular story that just works. Sheep Shearer, Gertrude's Cat, I don't know, like all these sort of small stories in the world make the world come alive and feel real. And those to me are much more interesting than this massive drama, which, I don't know, I feel RuneScape is not the platform for these large scale stories, but these small stories work really, really well.
Yep, agree.
I think there's room for both. I think they can do the little small just to ground you in the world that you're supposed to be saving, and then the big quests where you go on and save it. I think there's definitely room for both scales.
I'm not saying that we should get rid of like the large quests entirely. I think they're fine, right? Some of them are really good even, but you know, it can get too much. So like, going back to these smaller stories, which I think RuneScape has been doing a bit better in like the last year and a half maybe, makes me really happy, and I really hope they continue that trend.
And, you know, I mean, we were doing the comparison. When was this we were doing the comparison about the number of quests each year we're at?
That must have been on the roundtable.
Yeah. When was the last year we had lots of quests? 2013?
It was the year that RS3 was released.
2013. Okay.
Oh, 13. Okay. I don't know. It was the year RS3 was released.
Yeah, and that's when, of course, the whole God storyline started and whatnot, Sixth Age and the like. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to get back to the point where we have Quest Week every month on the podcast. But, I mean, questers aren't the majority.
Make questing great again, though.
That's right. That's right.
Next year.
We'll see what happens next year. I'm personally quite excited to see what they do next year. I think there's a lot of potential in where they're going. And it is a big storyline, but if they pull it off, it'll be wonderful.
We already answered number 3 in the discussion, so we won't wane too heavily on that one. Favorite song in the quest?
I don't think I can pick a single one, because what made them so powerful was how they worked together and sort of increased in intensity and like pulled the ambience forward over time. So I'm sorry, but I'm not going to answer this question because I can't.
All right.
No, I agree. They were all great, and they all work together in a really wonderful way that I don't think you wouldn't get the same impact if you had them on their own. So all of it, all the music, it was wonderful.
All right. And just because these guys haven't picked a question, I'm going to say the first one, Temporal Threads, just because temporal is a fun word.
Nice.
Will we see more Primrose and the Needle?
I mean, I think Modvaven answered half of that question. I think in terms of the other half, like Primrose, I think this was a this was something that stood on its own, and it should stay that way. I think it would break apart, like it would break open this thing by making this a continuation. I think they should keep it like in their own little corner of the world, leave the mysteries what they are, leave the experience we have as they are, and explore something new next time.
Yep, I agree. Boy, I'm going to be thinking of that forever now. What is Modvaven doing with the Needle? Yeah. All right. And thank you, Chodo, for those questions. Next up, we got one from Tanis, who is undergoing Thanksgiving festivities.
You make it sound like a chore.
Have you never done Thanksgiving or Christmas with a huge family?
Well, I've done Christmas. We don't
in
do
Christmas,
Thanksgiving here.
Yeah. No, I'm British, so we don't do Thanksgiving.
It can be a chore sometimes. But we won't talk about that. Hey, RSB&B crew. It's Tanis. Sorry I couldn't cover that great quest, but alas, it is Thanksgiving here in the U.S. today. Sirion, don't get too comfortable. In the words of Arnold, I'll be back. I could have put an accent on that, but I didn't. Every year on Thanksgiving, my family does what most people do. We eat and try to avoid political discussion with that Facebook uncle of yours. We also have a tradition of talking about what we are thankful for. I thought it would be cool if we did the same thing this year at RSB&B. Since we're a RuneScape podcast, let's give it a RuneScape spin and talk about what we're thankful for in regards to RuneScape. Thanks, guys, and have a wonderful holiday or whatever you celebrate up there in the frozen north. Thanksgiving here in Canada is actually on the second weekend of October.
Because you're weird.
Yeah, yeah, except I didn't have a Thanksgiving this year because I was in London.
Nice one. Dodge the bullet. Well done.
All right. What are we thankful for, RuneScape related? Let's start with you, Sirion.
Oh, God. Well, this is going to sound really stupid, maybe, but what I'm really thankful for is the last 2 weeks or so have sort of restored a lot of positivity. Like, the needle skips is great. The mining and smithing rework is great. Like, there's so much good stuff happening and passion going on, like, among the JMods. But of course, I also need to talk about, like, my clan, I guess. I'll do that again. No, absolutely. Like, seriously, the people I've met through RuneScape, it's stunning how people fly from all over the world to come meet in London, and we just hang out together, getting a cheeky Nando's, all that stuff. You know, these people are... Some are among the best friends I've made ever. So, you know, I wouldn't have met these people if it weren't for this stupid, silly game. So, yeah, I guess that's something to be really thankful for. And, like, it changed parts of my life irrevocably. So, yeah.
All right. How about you, Diana?
I think my answer would be similar, to be honest. I think that the best thing about RuneScape and the thing I am most grateful for in RuneScape is the side of the community I've got to know, really getting involved with it. So I think RuneFest this year was just such a good example of it. It was my second ever. It was my first one as a real member of the clan. I was really nervous about going there. But then, you know, meeting people who I hadn't seen since last year and getting on with them instantly. And I think what were the best moment was actually meeting a friend who I've been talking to online for about 2 years and meeting them in person time, kind of through this ridiculous game. And we're just getting on like a house on fire. Like there's so many great people I've met through this, like Sirion said, this stupid little game. But I'm incredibly grateful for that. And for it to be, on the whole, quite a nice community to be part of. So, yeah.
If only somebody had written an informer article about how it is to meet a friend you've spoken to online in real.
You're doing it wrong, by the way. You're doing it wrong, by the way. And, what? You know, on this topic, you know, I couldn't agree more with either of you guys. You know, there's this game started off as a little thing that you play to kill some time. Then it morphed into – I'm just going to do a brief run through of how this morphed. Then it morphed into signatures and calculators at rsbnb.com. Then it morphed into discussion forums and then a podcast, then a friggin' thing called RSBNB Informer, which you can find at informer.rsbnb.com. Many great things there, including this piece from Sirion called From RS with Friends to Friends with RS, where he's just detailed in this article here of everything that you just said regarding RuneScape community and meeting people in real life. Really a good discussion, I think, and it summed up RuneFest Month perfectly for this. So give that a read. I'll put a link to it in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. But, you know, it started off so small, and then it's, I think for everyone here, it's the same general trajectory. And, you know, we said the community clan quest, and I can throw RSBNB into there. Everyone over the years who has contributed and helped out and in various ways. And as I said at the Patreon segment, you guys might think that this is something we're just saying for Patreon, but in the reality of it is that this podcast wouldn't be anything out there without the listener base. If it had no listener base, it would have no reason to exist. So, selfishly, maybe, I'm going to say that I am thankful for the community surrounding RSBNB Update. And, of course, as well, the side communities involved with RSBNB and Clan Quest and whatnot as well. And I think everyone should be aware of that. And anyone who is, you know, playing as a lone wolf or whatnot, you can join the Friends Chat Bits Bytes, or you can join the Clan Quest Clan Chat if you're interested in questing at all. It's the perfect clan to join if you're interested in questing. Basically, you just join there, sit in there for a bit, get to know everyone, say you're interested in joining, and someone will sponsor your application in. And that's the easiest way to, you know, find a group of like-minded people if you enjoy lore and questing, clan chat, clan quest, and whatnot. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, it's all about community. And I think that's one thread that we have all brought together here with this, is that it's the community. And sure, we're thankful for this month of November. I think November has been pretty full in the grand scheme of things, hasn't it? So
I'm so excited by it.
Yeah. So I think that's a good answer. And just to bring everything back to the beginning, the community is the needle that threads through RuneScape, or drags the thread through RuneScape and binds us all together, just to use a metaphor from the quest this week. It's
a pretty stretched metaphor, but the sentiment. So well done.
So, thank you, Tanis, for that one. And I'm glad that we got to talk about everything in that question. So, well done. Anything else on that one? All right. Well, if you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a DM or at mention on Twitter @rsbnb. So we're going to move on to tech news right now. And we got a whole selection of tech news this week. Some of it a little bit surprising, other bit inferred. But this week, Apple shares continue to fall as it has reported that Apple has slashed production of this year's new iPhone models, the iPhone XS, XR, and XS Max. And even though these were just revealed in September, Apple has told its suppliers it plans to slash production of the iPhone XR by a third of the approximately 70 million units it had asked the supplier to build between September and February. 70 million cut by one third. This is a big deal for Apple.
I'm not surprised.
No, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised either. The XR is, as The Verge described it, they were stretching it far enough that it was good enough for an upgrade. And in reality, sure, you get a faster CPU, maybe a better camera, but on the whole, the XR is not an amazing device. So, you know, there was also another thing that Apple's market share of the Mac market share with the new MacBook Airs and MacBook Pros has also likely been going down this quarter. And Sirion, you and I were talking about this earlier in the week that, you know, this is going to be an interesting few months for the company, isn't it?
Yeah. They need to really come with something if they want to restore, like, the frontier of technical innovation that used to be under Steve Jobs.
Because if you're producing 70 million iPhones and you're cutting that by a third, you're bringing that down to 47 million iPhones from 70 million that you thought you were going to need.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, sure, we can talk about amount of revenue that'll be bringing in and whatnot, but when you're looking at a cut of that many devices, and not only for the 10R, but also for the 10S and the 10S Max, you have a problem.
You completely misjudged the market at that point.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting to see what the new Pixels do, if Google has similar issues on that. But I think the problem with these new devices is they're just too damn expensive. And I was even talking about various things that we're doing here for Black Friday sales. It's gotten to a point here where the providers, the carriers, are charging extra money for the voice plans to roll the price of these phones in for people to purchase them at a decent value of $199. That's how far Apple has stretched the carrier market here in North America. And obviously, you guys in the EU and whatnot, I think more people buy their phones outright there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and obviously that's going to cause a huge problem for those folks there. And not many people are talking about this because I think the press generally has a favorable view of Apple. You have to go to outlets like CNBC to hear this, which is purely a financial-based news website. So, I don't know. We just had the Apple earnings call, but they got to definitely turn something around and fast. I think, what would you say the latest they probably have is, what, next year's release?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They need to come up with something, yeah, I'd say so. After this debacle of the 10R and 10S and all that stuff, they need to show next year that they still got it. And if they can't, I think the investors will walk away.
Yep. And Tim Cook will have to go.
And Tim Cook will walk with them, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's as simple as it is. That's no ifs, ands, or buts. I like Apple.
If a CEO can't bring money into the pockets of the investors, then the CEO is not doing their job, and the CEO is out. It's simple as that.
Yep. Diana, you have anything on this story?
I'm afraid I don't really know anything about
it. Okay. Do you use an iPhone, or do you use an Android, or
BlackBerry? Android for me. Okay. I've never really been a fan of Apple.
Okay. All right.
Mostly. So I'm not disappointed.
All right. I'm going to move us on to our next story then. And this one is one that you cannot make up. And it is absolutely the most horrible story we could be talking about. And that is that Tumblr, the microblogging website, has been removed from the iOS App Store due to initial child pornography getting past their filtering technology. As of today, recording this on November 22nd, the app is still gone from the App Store. It was first removed on November 16th, and all they said is that they were working to resolve an issue with their iOS app, and no one has really said what was happening directly regarding this, but sources said it was indeed related to child pornography being on the surface. The statement says, from Tumblr, we're committed to helping build a safe online environment for all users. We have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to media featuring child sexual exploitation and abuse. And this is an industry-wide problem as we work collaboratively with our industry peers, like the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, to actively monitor content uploaded to the platform.
Are either of you on Tumblr by any chance?
No, I stay far away from that site.
That's a very wise choice. I'm on it that thing of them having.
Sorry, what was that? The internet cut you out there.
Oh, sorry. Just that statement of them having a zero tolerance policy towards that sort of stuff is just, it's like Facebook saying they have a zero tolerance policy to that kind of stuff. It's just not true. Or their systems just aren't good enough. So maybe this will be the thing they need and actually do something about it, because it's a horrible thing for them to be supporting. And yeah, they need to get their act together, and hopefully this will be what kicks them into doing it, because being removed from the iOS App Store, that's major. That's really, really major, and it's going to hurt them.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just Tumblr, it's not just Facebook, it's also Reddit, Twitter, any other image sharing site on the internet practically. And, you know, they say every image is scanned against an industry database of known child sex abuse materials, and images that are detected never reach the platform. But as both Sirion and I can attest, it is very, very hard today to do image matching still.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting easier, but it's still very, very hard. And, you know, this is something the industry needs to work towards, and I think over time it needs to be something that people are aware of. And, you know, I don't even know what the market is for Tumblr. Who goes on Tumblr? Like, what is the site catered towards?
Pretty much anything you can imagine. Like, loads of people as, like, personal blogs. It's a very easy blogging interface to use. So if you don't want to set up a WordPress or, like a text-based blog, you can set up a Tumblr instead. It's just quicker and easier. But there's a lot of kind of fandom communities. The community has, like, anything you can think of, there's a little community on there. It's a very strange, very, very strange platform in terms of the... I don't want to speak for it because I'm not involved. I just use it to promote the webcomic I write. Like, that's it. But it's... Yeah, it's very odd. It's tragic but not surprising that it's the platform that hosts this sort of thing. They have a problem with porn blots, not necessarily child blots, but just in general, bot blogs that are, you know, pornography. So it's the sort of thing they have a problem with and they've been ignoring.
Yeah, and so, I think there needs to be another level of transparency regarding this. It'd be good if we saw the other big ones like Twitter and Facebook also say how much is blocked, how much is removed. And because
how do they block it? How do they remove it? Like, Facebook has their human. And I remember reading about I can't remember where, but in a certain country somewhere, only two people working on their kind of anti-fake news team, kind of reviewing things. And to think two people for an entire country, like, that's just not good enough, is it? So you're right, there needs to be more transparency. How do they actually do this? And what are their processes? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Because it's important.
You know, I don't know that there's an answer aside from more automation with this. I think, it's going to be everywhere, even on Facebook. The question is, you know, do you think there would ever get to a point where Facebook would be removed from the App Store?
It depends what the alternatives were, isn't it? Because I've read in quite a few Facebook plateaus at the moment, and people are starting to think, oh, maybe this is the beginning of, not the end, but beginning of the stopping of the growth of Facebook. And people are starting to think, okay, how can we take what was good about Facebook, you know, 5 years ago, and get away from all the bad stuff?
Yeah. Oh boy.
The constant ads.
Oh boy. You're
all the horrible stuff.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. We talk about Facebook almost every other week here on the podcast, or in tech news and whatnot. It's a constant thorn in our side. I just never imagined we would get to the point where this was something that would cause an app to be removed, but that is an issue that is here. So
I wonder if it's kind of the warning shot that this is, people are starting to face up to the issue, and maybe something will be done about it properly.
I don't know. I haven't heard about this anywhere other than tech media. Have you guys?
I've seen it on Tumblr. Everyone's just been up in arms about it on Tumblr. But other than that, no. I haven't seen it in mainstream news anywhere.
Anything in like BBC and whatnot and the like?
No.
Elsewhere? No? Okay. Alrighty. Sirianna, anything else on this one?
Not really.
Yeah. It's a hard battle to fight. It really is. All right. And our last piece of tech news is a follow-up to something else we've talked about before, and that is video game loot boxes. There was a study that was published just yesterday with the title, Video Game Loot Boxes Are Linked to Problem Gambling. So this study was done in a basically – I'll read here from the abstract. There is concern in the research community that similarities between loot boxes and gambling may lead to increases in problem gambling amongst gamers. A large-scale survey of gamers, 7,422, found evidence for a link between the amount that gamers spend on loot boxes and the severity of their problem gambling. The link was stronger than a link between problem gambling and buying other in-game items with real-world money, suggesting that gambling-like features of loot boxes are specifically responsible for the observed relationship between problem gambling and spending on loot boxes. It is unclear from this study whether buying loot boxes acts as a gateway to problem gambling, or whether spending large amounts of money on loot boxes appeals to more problem gamblers. However, in either case, these results suggest that there may be good reason to regulate loot boxes in games. And, you know, we've talked about this before. We knew this was a case in the past. So basically, the problem gamblers will spend anywhere between $5 and $100 on loot boxes per month. Moderate risks will spend anywhere between $1 and $50. Low risks anywhere less than $1 up to $20, and non-problem gamblers have either never bought a loot box or spent upwards of $10 at most. And there is a margin of error on this study, but nonetheless, I think this has pretty much confirmed everything that the media and whatnot has been saying over the past year and a half or so with this.
I mean, yeah, I think it's good to finally get some scientific validation, and I think it's all public, so like you can just follow along with the methods to see what they used. And you know, I'm not an expert in statistics. I'm not an expert in the sciences that are involved in this, but you know, from a quick spin too, it looked that these people knew what they're talking about, and you know, they have a pretty large sample size. I think it just confirms what we already knew, and I know that we can use this to sort of come back to, like, I think it has become clear that self-regulation is just not happening at this point. I'm not a big fan of government regulation on this, but we definitely need something here to fix this problem.
Yeah. They got 14,000 responses collected in total from the gamers on this. 872 were under the age of 18 and weren't studied. And interestingly enough with this, you have some odd data in here. Two participants listed their ages as greater than 120 and were deemed non-serious. But $30 billion a year is what the industry is estimated to bring in terms of revenue for the video game industry. And you can see here why it's a big issue to talk about, and why video game companies, you know, EA and Activision, Psyonix, I guess, who makes Rocket League. I don't know if we could – you think Rocket League counts? Because, I mean, they're just cosmetics in Rocket League, I believe.
It counts.
Okay. All right. Overwatch as well then, which is also another huge one. So this is indeed an issue going forward, and you know, this just came out today across my feed. I didn't have time to go into the exact data behind this, but I think what we might do with this is either form some kind of special on the podcast about this paper, or some kind of informer article summing it up, because this is something that everyone needs to know about here. Overwatch, 40 million players. Rocket League, 40 million players. CSGO, over 25 million players as well. And I think it was Belgium that has banned the box, right?
Correct, yeah.
So, any other countries?
I think the Netherlands doesn't allow loot boxes if the contents have any monetary value, and that includes if you can trade online between them.
Okay. All right, so that would definitely be classed as the worst of it then. So, but nonetheless, the report will be linked in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com if you want to have a look at it. But we do indeed have some scientific data now that shows that, yeah, this is indeed going to be a problem, and a bigger problem for people who are problem gamblers. And that is more the reason for someone to come in and regulate this. The question is, how do you do it on a global scale? Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. RSBNB Discord while recording the show. Thank you, Sirion. All right. Well, I think that's it for tech news, unless there's anything else on that story.
No, that's it.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. So let's have a look at our November skill of the month, which is cooking. We have a very, very close race going on here as the month starts wrapping up. Tanis in first place with 59.9 million XP gain. Flash in second with 58.8, and Sorensen 57 in third with 10.9.
Sorensen is not winning?
Nope. They gave him a good beating and he quit.
Huh.
Surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised.
And there's an actual race going on for first.
That's a really nice close race.
Yeah. And if we look at the graph, we see that Tanis had a huge spike of almost 12 million XP gained on double XP weekend on one day.
Flash capped up pretty closely to that, though.
Yeah. So
Flash has been really consistent.
Mm-hmm. Except for double XP weekend, which is a huge friggin' mountain. But anyways, that's skill of the month. And I should also mention the achievement Bonanza Fortnite still going on for a couple days until Monday. And currently, Wolfie is in first place with 850 rune score gained. Second place is Sorensen 57 with 555. And third place is Pernasius with 380. Then in fourth, we have someone named Sirion with 345.
Hey, it's not bad for somebody who doesn't have time to play the game in
yeah,
the first place.
I mean it's a good marker. Somehow I got 235.
Not bad.
So
I might still give it a go this weekend if I have some time.
Yeah, you got time.
Get some of the annoying ones out of the way. Some of them are quite fun, to be honest. I'm a bit skeptical of this whole sort of ticking off thing, but it does allow you to sort of go in there and do something else. Just do a small thing and feel good about ticking off that achievement.
And just for reference, if anyone is trying to do the cow meat tenderizer achievement, Parnassius has told me that he spent over 4,000 Slayer points trying to get a cow task. But if you go to a free to play world and request a task, you'll get a cow task much more simply because it only looks at free to play Slayer monsters.
Nice.
So
a cow task. That's hilarious.
Right?
I would use a Slayer VIP ticket for that as well, a VIP ticket. Oh my goodness, that's awkward.
Yeah, lots of Slayer points. Now comes the time of the show where we normally mention the achievements. But as it was double XP weekend, I have over a page and a half of achievements here. So we're not going to read through all these achievements because we would be here for another hour doing that. But so I'm just going to say congratulations to everyone who worked in this double XP weekend for everything that they have accomplished. So good job all around. Huge double XP weekend by the looks of it. And I know from the numbers, just mention these because I know we got lots of Clan Quest listeners. Clan Quest gained over 1.1 billion total XP on double XP weekend.
Yeah. Clan Quest, Clan Best.
That's that's like half the maximum value you can throw into an integer. Mm.
I also think we got, I think it was 44, 99s, or 120s combined.
Yes.
So.
We have nothing better to do at weekends, do we?
Yep, it certainly seemed that way. All right, I believe we have a pick of the week, so what do you got for us?
Okay, so I'm doing pick of the week this week, and my pick is Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So this is the latest Assassin's Creed game that came out in October. I haven't actually had the chance to play it yet, but I'm very, very excited to play it when I go home in about 4 weeks' time. I've watched a lot of playthroughs, watched a lot of kind of developer streams and stuff about it. It looks absolutely fantastic. I'm a big fan of the Assassin's Creed series anyway. I've played most of them. I think I've skipped out Syndicate and Unity, but all the other ones I've done. What I really love about this one is how different it is. Assassin's Creed usually focuses, obviously there's the assassins and the Templars and all that jazz, and it's usually one person going through the quest, going through the storyline, and their main driver is usually something like restoring their families, or da, 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 something on like that. And it's usually kind of most games, but it's kind of in a different historical situation. This one really struck me as different. Start off, you can choose who you play as. So you've got the choice of Cassandra or Alexios. They are siblings. Picking either of them doesn't have any effect on the game or how the quests pan out and how the storyline pans out. It's got a much stronger kind of role-playing element to it. So there's lots of punching dialogue. There's lots of choice to make. And the storyline just looks brilliant. Visually, it's gorgeous. I'm basically just very, very excited to play it. I've also got the book for it, which looks great as well. So I'm going to get stuck into that at some point.
All right. And for anyone wondering, it is probably also a good time to pick that up because Black Friday. I don't know if you guys end up with Black Friday deals in the UK, but
It'll be on a Steam sale somewhere.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Now's a good time to get
on. 33% off for Black Friday on Steam.
There you go. What more excuse could you want?
I've been sort of liking the Assassin's Creed storyline a lot, and I want to sort of play the game like chronologically. I'm still stuck halfway the first game.
The original Assassin's Creed is quite kissing. It's repetitive, and the first one is actually, by some way, I think the worst one. Like when it first came out, I remember when. Yeah. Everyone got so excited about it. It's like, oh, look at this. It's so different. It's so original. It's so new. But now they've gone on and actually done some pretty good games afterwards. It just seems not that great. If you want to start, I would say start with Assassin's Creed 2.
I have the 2 lying around, and I've been tempted to just chuck it all. More Reason 1 and play like Origin or something like that.
I would say start with the Ezio games because they're the best ones. So that's 2, Brotherhood and Revelations. They are so fun. He's the best protagonist of the entire series.
I think I have Brotherhood lying around actually.
Brotherhood was the first one I played, and it's just it's amazing. I love it. it looks a bit funky with the graphics, but it's still a good game. The only reason to play them chronologically would be to make sense of like the modern storyline, but I don't think anyone plays Assassin's Creed the modern storyline.
There's going to be a film about it anyway now, so...
There has been a film.
Has been.
Michael Fassbender was in it. It was terrible, and I loved it. It was just complete trash from start to finish, but it was great fun.
Well, it seems you guys are in agreement with Trekkie that the film was bad.
I remember hearing about, Michael Fassbender is it, and Marion Cotard's in it. Like, this could actually be a good film, and they could take one of my favourite franchises and make it into a good film. And then I went to see it, and it was terrible. It was so, so bad. But it was really good, so I'd recommend going to watch it anyway, just because it's a laugh.
Cool.
All right. Well, the pick of the week was Assassin's Creed Odyssey, newest in the Assassin's Creed franchise. Find it at Steam. Links in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. So now comes the point of the show where we talk about what we've been up to. So let's start with you, Diana. What did you get up to on Double XP weekend?
Oh, I forgot to train invention. I didn't actually do a lot. Shame on me. I am in the middle of a university and things are just absolutely nuts. So mostly I've been Master Quest Cape requirements, just ticking off those one by one. I forgot about all my my dummies. The other day I was sitting in pref with someone else who had also forgot all their combat dummies and just doing that after DXP, and it was quite embarrassing, but no, got it done in the end.
All right. How about you, Sirion?
I've done the big bank cleanup. All those words are capitalized. It's now a thing. I got rid of like all my proteins, got a bunch of XP. I didn't do much, to be honest. I've been quite busy. I played much more than I would usually, but it was mostly just standing in the bank, getting rid of all my protein cogs and protein logs. They rhyme. That's interesting. I wanted to do dungeoneering. I just couldn't make myself do something that involved thinking. So that didn't happen in the end. That's basically it. And then around that, I've been trying to get some of the new achievements done. That has actually been good fun. Like, I have been doing some basic stuff. There's lots of things where I need to like do one more thing sort of to complete it. Like, I'm like an anti-completionist sometimes. Like, I'll just go almost there and then don't finish it. Like, I need two more arc birds, for example. That's the only thing I need to finish the log. So, you know, I'll get those things done over the next next few weeks, hopefully.
All right. As for me on Double XP weekend, oh boy, I sunk the bank account. I made about 6,000 Super Melee potions, sold those off, and then I made about 2,000 Overload potions that I'm not sure I'm going to use.
Always pays to be prepared.
And
I think what Shane is saying is that he's looking for a combat coach and wants to really get into bossing.
And I got 26 million Herblore XP on the Double XP weekend.
That's commendable.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think I had the money for it, but oh my god, those overloads go quick. So, that was that. So I'm just rebuilding the coffers right now. I also have good news. I'm 225K out of 250K beans to get the Master Farmer title on the player-owned farm.
Very nice.
So those have been my two main things going forward with that. So not much else beyond that.
I mean, we have been looking at the mining and smithing beta as well.
Yeah, we did. I should put that up, shouldn't I? I should put that up on YouTube, our little...
When's the beta running until?
I think it's Tuesday. Till Monday.
Tuesday.
Oh, Tuesday, actually.
Yeah.
Tuesday. Okay, I'll get on that over the weekend. I haven't actually... Get in there, see what it's like.
Yeah, but we did a little run through of that. That'll be up on YouTube, youtube.com/RSBNB. You can also find the roundtable there that we did this past weekend. It was you, Sirion, Tanis, and Tycho popped in for a bit. That was a good ranging discussion. We could have went on for longer, but I had to go and do some other things after that. So we'll hopefully be able to do that again in the future. But wrapping this up for real this time, if you want to join us in game, you can find us at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. We're also on Twitter at RSBNB, and full show notes for everything we've talked about today can be found at update.rsbnb.com. So with that being said, thank you everybody for joining us for this episode of RSBNB Update. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody in the United States, and I guess what everyone else is going to be looking forward to this weekend, all the Black Friday stuff that's happening. So with that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.